Judah and Matthew are dumpster people, and they occasionally use foul and inappropriate language. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to Brother Date. It's Matthew right here.
And I'm Judah.
Are you right
it's
there?
Judah. It's Judah. I'm right here.
It's Judah right there.
It's Judah right here.
Earlier, my 2-year-old son farted hella loud and looked at me and busted up laughing. Just laughed so hard he couldn't even stand up.
So I mean, I get it.
That's how things are going. He's turning into every boy.
You got to take advantage of the little things, man. I still have the spring issue of USA Philatelic open to the horses
issue. You just laugh about that every day now.
Just every day now. I just look at it and think, why do they think they have to put the word horses on there?
The other way, who knows what kind of animal that is otherwise? Some kind of beautiful animal with gorgeous fucking hair.
Hey, what are these stamps about, man? Horses!
Yeah, no, I agree. It's best to laugh while we can, because, we're planning
because it ain't gonna be good from here on out.
We're planning on going on a picnic this weekend, and like, who knows what? All kinds of crazy shit happens on picnics. So,
oh wow, that's what I've discovered. Yeah,
could be bad.
I mean, sometimes it's the worst thing that happens is you're. One time prospective mother-in-law shows up and implies she wants to have a 3-way.
As you're just doing a straight fucking make out.
Yeah. Oh man. Well,
what week is
we don't
it?
Have
what
any
week is
other
this?
Segments. This 146? Is going to be week 146.
It sounds like so many. It sounds like we're really deep into it, but we still got 30 weeks.
Yeah. It means we got 30 left, but We've talked about it before. We're probably going to collapse the last 3 into one episode. So
we definitely should do that.
So maybe 28.
I called this one all beef and none of the cow.
Yep. I'm sure you'll explain why.
Yep. And
for me, definitely starry stars.
Based on great dialogue and great performances.
Some good dialogue, well acted.
Yep. Well, last week, DS9 was atrocious. A crime against women.
And it was a crime against women last week.
So they finished last week, which means they get to fucking lead off.
Yeah, so let's talk about Time's Orphan.
The hotness. Molly, you remember her, little Molly, the baby, barges into the O'Brien's bedroom and wakes her parents up so they can go on a big picnic. She's real excited, so you can guess it ain't gonna go so well. Maybe like
I think it'll be fine as long as no one makes big grandiose promises. That's the thing that I think they can't possibly afford to do.
But, like, maybe a Jem'Hadar will capture them, or, like, a crystal entity will zap them real good.
Yo, there's lots of stuff that can go wrong on
she
a planet.
She could fall into a pond and drown. You get it.
Hey, we ain't seen that one yet.
O'Brien promises Molly, as you hinted at, that he'll never send his family away again, no matter what. And everything is going just so great. But Molly goes into a super dangerous and magic cave and falls into a portal. She gone, man. Just straight ate up by a portal. Credits.
They fucking have been to this planet before.
Yeah.
Not only that, but they don't take a runabout here or nothing. They get on a shuttle. This is a shuttle destination.
Yeah.
It's like the bus stops at Bajor.
Man,
and then it
I really
stops
get the feeling
asteroid.
In the future, the vacation, like, half of the fun is taking the shuttle ride. I don't think people like to go and just beam down to their vacation. They like to have to do the shuttle part too. It's like a, well, it's we like know when Jordy you used to does. Go on a Sunday drive with your old sea dad or something.
Right. But yeah, this place that the shuttle goes to has a portal in it.
Also, I don't know how big this planet is, but they really did their picnic right next to that magic portal.
They found the one spot, for sure. The rest of it looks exactly like some park in Malibu for some reason.
I think Dax said it's some kind of time portal. Maybe she said more helpful stuff too, but I laughed so loud at some kind of time portal that I missed it.
Yeah, after the credits, the whole crew has fucking shown up. The whole Defiant came in everything.
She literally says, some kind of time portal. That's what we get out of her.
Listen, that's what you get when you only have a billet for a lieutenant junior grade or whatever.
That's your chief science officer. Yeah, it's not
is great. You're going to get, I don't know, man. I've been in this job for 8 months. I think it's a time, some kind of time portal.
Some kind of time portal. I don't know. Kira's here to investigate because this was a Bajoran magic time portal cave. Maybe yes. This is some Dalrock shit.
Oh,
I'm just saying, man, bring the Dalrock in for questioning. He might have something to say.
Hey, I forgot about that. I forgot that Bajor was a place where there could be a Dalrock.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't Bajor. It's just some Bajoran colony.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't. We'll talk about it in world building, but I don't
know. If
understand.
This beautiful planet is under Bajoran control,
they should just move
I don't
there.
Understand why it's not full of fucking farms. Every other week, it's like, oh, the Hasperat province. There's another famine in the Hasperat province.
I know it's ironic because of the name.
Yeah.
But, you know, actually, Hasperat is the food is named after the province. So you can just save your smart looks. O'Brien fucking wrenches on some Starfleet gear so good that they're able to straight beam Molly back through the portal. But
yeah, they ain't going in there. Listen, no one's going in this portal.
No, we'll talk about it, but at no point does someone say, maybe we could just poke our head in there and look around and see what's going on in the portal.
Hey, let me just poke my head in there real quick and scream Molly.
Why don't we put a camera on a long stick and put it in there and see what happens?
See if we can see where Molly is.
Yeah, no one says any of that.
They would have done some different stuff if they'd tried that.
Yeah, the episode could have been
if
pretty,
they'd sent a
short.
Fucking exocomp through there or any kind of thing, and it came back and it was like,
she's right
hey,
there.
Man, she's there, but
someone's got to go through and get her because she's scared.
No, I mean, also she's 18. There's something wrong with the way we activated the portal this time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the first time. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, they beam her back. Spoiler alert. Thanks for spoiling the whole episode.
She's
a cave woman now, and
teenage
she's
cave woman.
A fresh, hot 18-year-old cave woman, Bashir says, with his mouth. They quickly hand-wave the idea of trying again and trying to get Molly back the right way, because this Molly, the one covered in bruises and cuts and crazy cave woman energy, deserves to have the great memories of 10 years stranded as a cave person on a planet by herself.
Yep, that's right. Bashir's like, no, man, this lady's got rights. You can't just make her disappear. And even Keiko, Molly's mother, not a member of Starfleet, goes, yeah.
He's got a point.
Yeah, he's got a point. He's I can't point, kill this
Miles.
Little girl.
This is our Molly. I mean, kinda. So now they're gonna
And
raise...
Miles doesn't say to her, yeah, but then it won't matter. She'll never have existed. It's nothing.
She won't know. No one ever says that.
She won't. No one knows it.
Hey, man, she ain't gonna know.
Hey, as a time displaced person, you remember that I'm not your husband, right?
I have the most right to speak on this subject.
Yeah. I think everyone would be fine if we just did that.
Anyway, now they're gonna raise this adult lady bonk. And they let her sleep in the arboretum and stuff. And they bring her melon. Like she's some kind of lemur. And it's clear that Molly kind of remembers them, but life's been weird ever since the Dalrock kidnapped her and made her his cave bride. So there's a lot to work through. Just maybe a breakthrough when she wants Keiko to brush her hair. But when O'Brien shows up later that day, Molly's in full bonk mode now. Bonk's adventure. She's all crazed and saying home over and over.
Did you say you were doing A plot, B plot? Because you're doing A plot, B plot.
Oh, with DS9, there's almost no other way to do it.
Okay. Yeah, it would be wild if you had to do it the way my notes have it, and you just had to keep cutting back and forth to B plot, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Always meaningless in every episode.
It's straight up insulting in this one.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're like, all right, she wants to go to O'Brien's quarters. That's what she thinks of as home. Even the little baby Molly couldn't possibly think of that as home. Spends way
for
more
sure,
time
she's
with
only
Keiko.
Been there 3 months out of her whole life. Yeah,
Bajor or wherever they are, Earth for Keiko's mom's birthday that lasted a whole year.
One of Keiko's affair partners' quarters, probably. For the presumably constant affair she's having.
She seems to remember the starry stars and shit, but she gets pretty wild when she sees her own room. These creeps took a picture the day she disappeared and framed it. And she finds that picture and points to it because she wants to go back to that planet. That's her home.
Being more charitable, I thought there was a possibility that this was from a previous visit to that planet. But then I remembered the line of dialogue where they specifically said, when we went to this planet last time, you were still in your mommy's... No, uh-huh. it was about Kirayoshi. He was still in Keiko's belly.
Yeah, they look the same age. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so she's... I'm just saying, she's... My chart says 7, but they're saying she's 8. That's a very minor crime by Star Trek standards.
Sure.
Also, Molly, that actress could be 8. I'd buy that.
Yeah.
But they're saying she's 7 now. Yoshi was at most 2, so, you know, maybe that picture could have been of a 5-year-old if she's still doing her hair the same way.
Maybe, man. To me, it looked exactly like they all looked in this episode. It looked like they took a picture, and even though they didn't have a chance to put that picture up till she'd already disappeared, somehow they did that.
Yeah, when after they got back to the station with Cave Molly,
with her, they put the picture up.
They put the picture. That's
of
a possible
their great
interpretation.
Picnic day. Anyway, she points to it. She wants to go back to that planet. That's her home now. So they ain't going back there. It's got magic portals all over it. So they take her to the Hollow Suite instead, and she likes that. But fucking
well. Also, don't forget O'Brien is still working.
Yeah, he's got to catch up.
He has not taken time off.
He keeps saying he's behind on his repair schedule, and he's regularly extremely behind, so that's not good.
So he can't just go to the fucking planet, man.
No, that
he
was his vacation.
He didn't take PTO for this.
That one day they went for the picnic, that was his day off. They take her to the Hollow Suite. She's having a great time, but wouldn't you know it, some Klingons need to get in there and massacre some women and children or whatever they're going to do. And when they turn off the holo program, she loses it, and she bites Quark and all kinds of shit, and then she stabs a guy with a broken bottle. She stabs a Tarkalian.
It's a broken champagne flute. I'm surprised it even did anything.
Well, anyway, she stabbed a Tarkalian, and that's a big deal. That's a big no-no. Tarkalians are, always talking about how they will not tolerate being stabbed.
Yeah, they ain't got a sense of humor about it.
No. And now Starfleet wants to take her to a special facility. I bet it's that admiral that wanted his Andes so bad he could taste it. You know what I'm talking about. Give me the Andes! That guy. Then she almost knocks herself out in the brig force field. And, so everyone's real sad. And O'Brien's acting like he's gonna go along with this care facility plan. But he's really smart as tack. He's gonna steal a runabout and put the girl in the portal and blow up the portal, and the girl will live with the kangaroos and owls or whatever they got on that planet again. And they almost pull it off, but they're captured by some Starfleet fucking G-Man goon. It's okay, though, because hearing the call of his spirit animal, Justice, Odo lets them go. And after the portal's reactivated, Molly says, "Stars, you're home." And also...
I had to take a lap, man. I had to stop it and take a lap when that happened.
And also...
I just fucking paced around my empty apartment going, "Nope, nope, nope."
Also, she says, "Molly loves you."
Yep.
Even as a parent, I smirked a big smirk. But guess what? Now there are two whole Mollies, because adult cave woman finds 8-year-old Molly in the cave on the other side of the portal.
This time the portal did go to the right time.
And she shows her how to go back through the portal and gives her doll and everything that Keiko packed for her. and she's reunited with their parents. That was a very conceptually challenging situation for a cave person, but she handled it well.
She did. Also, she didn't know it was going to mean her death.
No. No, she doesn't understand time things. Anyway, I doubt anybody's going to charge this 8-year-old with attempted murder now, and O'Brien will probably just get a note in his file for that escape from Deep Space Nine, so...
O'Brien's file is all note at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
it's like, if nothing else, add a little entry onto the reviews end. About how his repairs are constantly late.
Yeah, they'll just add a little note onto the end. No one will even notice it's already 18 pages long. B-plot. Dax and Worf babysit Yoshi. Should I even bother to explain this? Like, seriously, please. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, well, we need to know.
All right, Worf thinks he can babysit, and Dax is worried he's going to eat the baby. Basically. Pretty clear. It's pretty clear that's what she's worried about. But predictably...
Or, you know, shake it to death when it cries. Something like that.
Predictably, he can't get the baby to sleep. And Worf says it's important he do this right so he can prove to Dax that he can be a dad. Hey, man, that ship has sailed. She knows about Alexander. She met him. It's over, dog.
He says with his whole mouth, I failed Alexander, and I would have failed your children. And Dax doesn't say, Alexander's still out there. You could still be his dad.
Here's the good news about Alexander. If you ever tried, you could still do something. But instead, you're sitting here telling me that you have to prove to me that you can be a dad to my imaginary children.
That I don't want, by the way.
I never said I wanted. Instead of, like, I don't know, just calling your son. And then fucking Martok pops his head in and goes, right? That's what I told him.
And then Martok's wife. She's like, I still don't like you, but you're right about that. Also, Martok's fat, right?
She probably would ask someone that. Anyway, Kira Yoshi, I forgot Kira was in his name, fell down and wanged his head. And Worf basically starts applying the poison at his little suicide altar. He's a big failure, and that's that. And later, Dex says the O'Briens invited them over for dinner to thank him for watching Yoshi during this whole bonk thing. Weird that they call it that, and Dax uses air quotes when she repeats it. Worf is too ashamed to go until Dax tells him Yoshi started saying gung, 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 and that's something Worf taught him, so Worf is suddenly super happy and wants to go to that dinner. Episode over. Thank God. What was this great episode about?
So, I mean, here's the thought immediately after viewing this episode. Is the take, if something is a little bit difficult, just give up? Because they tried the holodeck, and it didn't work great, so now O'Brien wants to stuff the girl back into the portal.
Yeah.
And everyone around him basically understands that decision.
Yeah.
What a fucking slap in the face to anyone with a child with even minor differences, huh?
Yeah, it's true. It's like they got so used to just having normal-ass kids or whatever. And then they get one cave woman.
Like, if you get one 18-year-old cave woman you have to raise, and you're like, nah, fuck it.
Fuck that.
Let's murder her.
Send her back where she came from. I tried to drop her off at the fire station earlier, the space fire station, and they said she was too old. So, back through the portal.
Do you know what's better than sending her to a weird school where she might have to adjust for a week? Stuffing her into a portal to a land where there are no other people.
They literally were like, she loves it there. Don't worry about it. She's going to have a great time living alone. Remember how good she looked when we picked her up the first time? Not bruises all over her body at all.
It's gonna living out her natural life, running from whatever kind of wolves they got on that planet.
Yes, the next 15 years of her life, that'll be her whole life, will be fantastic.
Well, anyway, they're rewarded for their sacrifice of stuffing this girl back in the hole by getting their innocent little Molly back at the end. But what's the take they thought they were making? Because it can't be that.
No, they didn't know she was just hanging out in there, so...
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, they can't have been making a show that said, it's okay to just quit. It's okay to just quit being a parent when it gets weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. What were they trying to do? It's a very good question.
Are they trying to do parenting is knowing when to let go? Oof. I don't even know what the spin is on this episode, and I hated it. I'm giving it 2 points on the off chance that you could scrape a paper thin parenting lesson out of this.
Yeah, I had home is where. Home isn't just about, you know, a parent's love. Nature?
Did you fight for this country?
Versus nurture.
And that doesn't mean.
Is. I gave it a zero. I could not figure out what the hell this was supposed to be telling us at home. What was the advice they were giving? What are we supposed to do if something happens to our kid? I don't know.
It's just one more fucked up thing happens to O'Brien.
Yeah, he's had a hard time.
His girl cartwheels into an open portal.
He picked the worst picnic spot.
Two trees over, she's fine.
Yep. Ugh, so bad. flip it around to execution. It really is a laughably bad episode. It's got an insane setup, embarrassing performances, a wild resolution, and an extremely forgettable B-plot. Because it's 40 minutes, everything has to escalate so fucking quick. They go from a scene where everything is seemingly going great to the scene where they have to break Molly out of jail in like 35 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Like I hinted at in the description, the way they just give up on getting the right Molly back in the beginning because this Molly points at cavewoman covered in scrapes and bruises, has the right to exist, is some crazy business.
Yeah.
And the way that nobody at any point thinks it's worth the risk to, like, see what's in the portal, either after Molly, when she disappears, or after older Molly comes back, or maybe even to go with her, the plan, maybe send someone with her so she won't have to live alone on the planet for the rest of her life, you know, because you're her parents, and you'd think that you'd maybe would want to do that.
It's fucking worse than that, even, because this is not even in my notes because I didn't think of it until way later, but the Federation just left all their equipment in that cave. All the equipment needed to reactivate the portal is just still sitting there when O'Brien gets back.
There's no one in charge of that shit. They didn't bring one facilities person down or whatever to collect that shit.
Yeah, it's a time portal, but it's like to a deserted planet. There was one little girl there, but she's gone now, so.
No one's going to want to come back here. We can just leave this. This is fine.
This ain't nothing.
I don't know. I just said, man, if they don't care, why should I?
Yeah.
O'Brien's supposedly going to face some inquiry for his big jailbreak, but since they don't even show us that, just O'Brien smiling as it fades out, I don't think we're going to have to worry about it very much. I gave it a one.
Well, I didn't like it any better. Look, for like 15% of this episode, I was thinking, okay, this is tough. They brought some young actress in and said, okay, now you haven't spoken to anyone since you were 8, and you're basically Nell from the movie Nell. But for some reason, we're giving you 80s rocker hair and a crazy leotard. And I thought, well, I'm just going to have to suffer through this, but maybe it'll have a touching moment or two, like the hairbrush scene. Yeah. But then O'Brien tells Keiko he wants to throw her back down the well. And Keiko's like, what else can we do? That's and right. I'm over here screaming, I bet Miles can afford a big farm on Bajor, and she could sleep outside for a week until she gets used to roofs again. Jesus.
That's right. Yeah, you could try something.
You could try anything else other than murder.
Yeah.
And this is probably attempted murder, at least. Granted, there is a little bit of a technicality problem about who the victim is, since she ends up never existing.
Yep.
But, like, this can't be the first time that's come up in Federation law.
Nah, they got some crazy situations out there in space.
Anyway, the B-plot's awful, too. Worf is so dumb now. He's, like, he's sitcom husband dumb, and this is a sitcom plot.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you read about it, it turns out it only exists because they came in 9 minutes short on the A-plot. I don't know why it's always 9 minutes.
Also, the A-plot went so fast. Hey, guys.
Yes. They could have stretched it.
Just build it out a little bit. Then we don't They'd need the bad B-plot. They already returned the
leotard and wig to Kate Bush's dance studio or whatever. So they couldn't get Cave Molly back for any shoots, I guess. But maybe it's like you can write Molly freaks out and swings around on the tree on the page, and you think that'll probably kill some time, but it turns out it's only like 6 to 8 seconds on film.
That's right. Yeah, they had a cut where she did it for like 3 minutes and it was very unhinged. They went, you know what, this doesn't really make sense as an episode anymore.
I hated it. I hate O'Brien's decision, and I hate that everyone understands.
Yeah, I hate all of it.
That he's going to send this girl back into the fucking portal so she can die alone on a planet 300 years ago.
Again, I just thought, this is their daughter, who they love. I expected one of them to be like, I'll go with her. I'll make the big sacrifice.
Keiko steps off of Deep Space Nine and goes through the fucking portal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I will go with her so that she doesn't have to be alone anymore or something. But now they're just like, now we'll just fucking launch her back.
Well, they put
her
doll in her backpack. That's fucking good enough.
She can eat shit. I packed her an orange, so she'll be fine, right?
She's not going to get scurvy for a couple of weeks.
I couldn't believe it.
It's just so wild and bad. I gave it a 0.
No, that definitely seemed like they're like, we got Kiriyoshi, we're fine.
Yeah.
We don't need 2 kids.
He's fat and happy. It's perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's fine. Your score is also fine.
Okay. Well, here's world building.
World building.
A 20th method for traveling through time is discovered on a planet that you can just take a shuttle from to Deep Space Nine. On a family picnic.
Yeah.
It is also the only known method of time travel this week for some reason.
Yeah.
0 points.
Yeah.
They treat this portal like it's nothing. Why shouldn't I?
Ah, good. So we had the same question. Here's what I got. Magic cave on a Bajoran colony. Wait, they have more colonies? I thought they gave up on that shit after New Bajor. R.I.P. 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 Worf has stood in battle against Kelvins twice his size. Who were they? Why was Worf fighting them?
Were they the androids that took over the Enterprise?
When?
The original one.
Were there androids that took over the Enterprise and they were fucking huge?
Do you not remember Rojan and Kalinda?
Well, now that you mention it, I do not.
Do you remember where Scotty gets an android drunk with his green liquor that he doesn't know what it is?
Oh, those guys were androids? I can't fucking remember this shit.
No, sorry, you're right. They weren't androids. They were in human bodies.
Yeah, it was one of the 500 times there were dudes who would refuse to give up the delicious human
bodies. Relish in the flesh. Like, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I can eat and fuck and all that stuff, and I'm never getting
anyway, those guys were Kelvins. I don't know if that's the same.
Well, anyway, twice his size. Who are they, and why was Worf fighting them? I just want to know.
It's a good question.
Klingon rituals for babies. What kind of special care facility do they have in mind for this cave woman? Do they have one for, like, every kind of problem? Is there a care facility for babies that went through time portals and became cave women? For the recently portaled?
It's quick header level for me, but I will address what I think is going on.
Okay, well, anyway, I give it as much as a 1. It's, for that magic cave, I guess.
What about characterization?
I'm not sure we learned much about O'Brien and Keiko other than that they make wild decisions on the regular. Otherwise, just that they love their children.
These two people should not have. They should have, if they were going to get married at all, they should have married normal people, because the two of them together is a bad scene.
And they knew. They knew it. They tried not to get married. Just another thing Data ruined. Worf invented a thing about Dax not thinking he was a good dad, probably because he knows he's not a good dad. But, like, the fact that he's thinking of having another kid after the tragic failure that is Alexander's entire life is actually fucking disgusting.
Yeah, it's real terrible.
Odo sees no justice in sending this wild woman to a care facility, I guess. I gave it a 3.
O'Brien is a deadbeat dad.
There's a lot of that going around.
He hasn't seen his daughter in months, and he promises that he's never going to let her go again.
Yeah.
But as soon as she stabs one alien with a champagne flute, he stuffs her through some ancient time trapezoid.
Yeah. It's true.
It's too tough, man. He's got to get back to that bachelor life.
he hopes after that that Keiko will be disgusted with him and leave the station again so he can pal around with some Bashir.
We ain't seen Keiko in a grip now. Her first moment on scene, she is hassling O'Brien about his weight and putting him on a diet, even on the big family picnic. You're going on a diet starting right now, fatso.
How does this future work? I didn't even know you could get food from the replicator that was bad for you.
No, because it sasses Troy about eating chocolate all the time that one episode, remember?
That's true, it does. Even the replicator knows.
Fucking writers hated her so much.
They hated the character they wrote so much.
Worf is not listening to his wife when she says she doesn't want to have children. They got married without even talking about it, I guess, huh?
Seems like it.
Odo's going to let O'Brien murder his weird adult cave daughter.
Yeah, for justice.
What's good here? I gave it a 2.
All right, that's fair. It's not a good one. This one wasn't a good episode.
He's just like a dad promising that they're going to be a family again from now on. And then, like, as soon as the first fucking speed bump gets in his way, he's like, nah. I'm going to just going to leave her. Let's leave her in the woods.
Yeah, it wasn't good. All right. Well, quick ones then.
I thought Keiko poking at O'Brien's tummy was pretty devastating, but she could still learn from Worf's old nanny or Martok's wife about calling a man fat.
It's true. There's another level that she has not yet reached.
Yeah, she's not on that Klingon level yet.
She's on that Klingon level where you just, the last thing you say before you leave the room, never to see that fucking person again for the rest of your life, you go, you're still fat.
You're still fat.
Pow! Eat that!
Call us out!
I think he smiles. Because his body doesn't know what to do with the feeling.
Oh, yeah. That was a tough one, man. Kampok took a big L there.
No, he was still into that lady, even though she was 100 years old. And she gave it to him.
Also, Keiko hates his fucking cat.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
I didn't even know the cat existed. Where did the cat come from again?
Oh, you remember his undercover assignment with those down-and-out mobsters?
I do remember now about that guy who kept saying he's got good sense about people. And he kept saying it was all about family. I remember that guy. I remember it was about family.
Oh, O'Brien was like a brother to him, but he's looking after his cat, Chester, still.
They wrote a character so pathetic, I did actually feel pity for him when O'Brien told him. What do you mean, though? I said we were family 500 times.
They didn't want to invent new portal CGI, so I wrote, oh no, man, she fell into the Great Link.
Yeah, I know.
She's that's sex. She can't be in there.
She's going to enjoy it way too much in there. She's never coming out. That's like getting your own tablet times a million.
Yeah, for sure. That's probably a parenting milestone that never occurred to me.
Oh, I mean, we have not gotten him anything like that because he's already so addicted to phones that we're like, he doesn't get any more technology till he's fucking 150. Every picture we take of him now is him trying to get the phone from us. It's him looking into the camera trying to grab the phone.
They make no mention of, let's say, the temporal prime directive or anything at this point, even though this is the show that introduced those weird time cops that came by.
Yeah, I remember them.
I was half expecting Dax to tell Kira, actually, it's probably illegal to bring her back. You know, technically.
Again, I don't know any of what Dax said in that scene after she said some kind of time portal.
Yoshi started crying, and I wrote, oops, this baby knows Kira used to be a piece of shit and doesn't think people can change.
I'm worried the baby thinks people can't change.
Nothing like watching a friend lose a child to make you want one of your own, huh, Kira? Yeah. They haven't even left. They're still trying to get Molly back. They don't even know about Cave Molly yet.
No.
And she's up there on the Defiant with Sad Sack Odo, and she's like, kind of want one of my own now.
I know, that is a weird impulse.
Most of the time, your baby's not going to go through a time portal, so.
At least she realizes. I think she seems to realize that. Yeah. Hey, man, was O'Brien just acting, or was he really super not worried? because Keiko's like hella worried, and O'Brien's like, I got this. Time portal? So easy. I'll be done in like 3 hours. We'll have our baby back. It's just a time portal.
O'Brien should fucking know that there's 18 other ways to travel through time if this one doesn't work.
For real.
They got a cloaked ship up in orbit. They could slingshot around the sun and sneak back there and no one would ever know. And they could get Molly 5 seconds after she came out of the fucking portal. But they're not gonna. They could go back to Bajor. Sisko's the emissary. Yeah, he could just borrow the orb of time. And then they could go back and get Molly that way.
No, you don't even have to go back in time to get her out of the portal. Just go back to the picnic 5 seconds before she goes through the portal and go, hey, there's a magic portal in here. Don't let your kid in here. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, just have Odo beam down and phaser the fucking rocks so that she can't cartwheel in there.
That's it. You're right. There are too many ways to be worried.
You could go back and catch her coming out of the portal. But you're right. With a time machine, there's infinitely many ways that
you could do it literally any way you want. That's the good news.
They could just put a fucking velvet rope across the entrance to the cave.
She's old enough. She'd probably get it.
You can't go in there.
She'd probably understand at 8. She'd go, I guess I'm not allowed to go in there. Okay.
No, it was a velvet rope, Daddy. I couldn't go in.
Dad, there's some kind of velvet rope over there that says I can't go into the cave. And he'd be like, shut up.
Dax says Worf never had to change diapers. Alexander was 4 years old when he was born. Nobody had to change diapers.
Yeah.
All they had to do was check this little guy's pockets every morning before he left the house with the good silver.
I was going to say that kid could fight within 3 days of emergence, but I think you're right. It could steal within 3 days of emergence.
What do you mean? Liar. Yeah, you're right. Worf never knew Alexander when he was a baby. Also, it doesn't seem like he could have been a baby.
No.
It just kind of doesn't make sense.
No, the growth curve would be very, very bizarre.
I thought Bashir was a big, dumb piece of shit, but it turns out he was right because Molly was genuinely very comforted to wake up and touch a rock. Yeah. She fucking reached out and put her hand on that rock and she was like, oh, okay.
Oh, thank God.
Everything's cool again. I buy a rock.
Oh, thank God. I thought I was in a world without rocks.
But then I was very distracted by this question. Who picked out this jumpsuit with stirrups for her?
I thought about that, too. I swear to God, it's like the actor's probably like, what's up with this jumpsuit? And then, what's her name? The lady who plays Keiko. This is all, future stuff. It's like future fashion. Look at all of us. All of our dumb pants go under our boots like we're a bunch of fucking idiots. So that's just how it works here. Every set of pants has stirrups in the future.
My actor's secret. My theory is that sometime in the early 24th century, it became considered extremely embarrassing to show your ankles again. So you'll notice that if a woman's wearing a skirt, she's got thick opaque tights on. Yep. And if she's wearing pants, they are fucking, the stirrups go under the boots. It's just, you're never going to get high waters with the, in
That's
the future.
Right. That's the fashion of the 24th century.
Like, she comes out in skins. Obviously they cleaned her up. Somebody cleaned her up. But then they're like, all right, so what should we put her in? And they don't put her in a fucking standard engineering jumpsuit Lore.
This is what we always talk about. No one since Lore has been thrown into that jumpsuit. Maybe that's why. They're just associated with Lore now. Should we give her the jumpsuit? Lore? I don't think so.
Well, it's like they've stood around and they probably each added an idea schism style. She's used to being barefoot, so we can't put shoes on her. Okay, well... She probably spends a lot of time in the trees, so let's put kind of a tree bark pattern on it. They just kind of went around the room and designed this outfit for her.
Perfect melding of form
and then
function.
Keiko's like, I always wanted to have hair like I was in Gem and the Holograms. Let me do that for my little girl.
That's right.
That's Showtime. My contribution to this schisms.
Showtime synergy.
Do you think anyone's ever put on a play of these scenes in the cargo bay where they're rolling the ball back and forth and she's going over to hide the ball behind rocks? Because once they moved some furniture into the cargo bay, it started to look a lot like some of the black box theater stuff I've seen locally.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe that one episode of TOS with that lady who could feel their pain and heal their pain.
You're talking about the episode The Empath.
Wait, I think her name was Jem.
Featuring Jem, the
Empath. Now that I think about it, her name was Jem.
Yeah, man. And the computer's name is Synergy.
I remember being very confused because Bones.
Wait, because someone had to say Gem and one of them Jim. Has the pin pen merger, so it sounds exactly the same. Yes.
I think it was Bones. And every
D.
time he
Kelly
said it,
has the pin pen merger because he's from Appalachia or something.
Who's he talking? Was that for Kirk or was that for the lady? I don't understand. But yeah, that one was entirely in a black box theater.
Anyway, I'd love to see these fucking scenes as a touching local theater play. All Raising right. Cave Molly.
Could two of the characters be Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, though?
Well, I mean, they could, for sure.
Maybe John C. Reilly is the cave woman.
Oh, I mean, he looks Cro-Magnon, so it would work. This has got to be the second or third to last Dax episode, and it's wasted on this B-plot.
We said it 1,000 times already. They definitely should have killed her in that one where Worf had to choose her or the agent or whatever. But again, they were mad at her.
Yes.
So they sabotaged their own show. We'll show her. We're going to make our show way worse, that bitch.
In fucking theory corner here, Matt, I'm starting to think that spinal replacement procedure in ethics wasn't a total success. I think Worf has
many psychological
mild
problems.
Undiagnosed brain damage.
Yeah, it could be.
The second he started talking about, I've got to prove to you that I can raise your babies, I was like, his brain's not right. His brain's not right. He's not listening.
He's got that Trump brain rot for sure.
He's inventing a problem for himself.
Yeah. I mean, he has sucked on Maine. At least since then. Probably before then, though.
Also, why is he embarrassed when O'Brien and Bashir catch him making baby noises to a 1-year-old?
Yeah. Yep.
Also, why do they think it's funny?
It's almost like whoever wrote that has no idea what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, a little bit. I was so pissed when Keiko started talking about O'Brien's shift. Like, is he out of PTO? What the fuck? Why is he working now? Do you think if you went into your boss, and bear in mind this is the Federation and it's all in the energy improvement credit, self-improvement credit system.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, my 8-year-old went through a portal and she came back 18 and she can't talk and she hates us. And we're living in the cargo bay where there's AstroTurf. Do you think I could have a day off? I bet you'd get it.
Yeah, okay. In this universe, has my boss been fired? Or yes or no? Who am I
dealing
with?
Good question.
Who it's am a good question. With? And sub question, who am I dealing with in my job in real life? Who's my boss?
That is a good question. I don't know who you report to.
Okay, all right. I don't either. I'll let you know, though.
I haven't seen the new org chart.
Okay. My boss got fired today. Sorry.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Personal stuff.
She's probably freaked out because I don't think there's a toilet in that cargo bay, and I bet that AstroTurf cuts her bunghole.
Also, she hasn't
you shouldn't
read,
be pooping on that stuff.
She hasn't read the studies, but all that little rubber they got down in there is a major carcinogen.
All those little chunks of rubber just getting aerosolized on every play?
Yeah, you're not really supposed to be playing around in that, so... But again, she hasn't read that. She hasn't read it because she can't read, so...
Hey, I know late season 6, very late season 6 is the wrong time to be asking this, but why don't the Hollow Suites have a back entrance that doesn't go through the bar?
Mm.
People mainly use them for weird sex stuff, right? You should be able to, like, step right off a turbo lift and into the back door.
Yeah. Yeah, they should have discreet entrances for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I can only guess so many bad things go on in there. The Quark has to make it so that there's only a single point of ingress and egress. It's just so that he can get a handle on whatever's going on in there.
Do you remember, Matt, when we met Garth of Izar and the other 4 remaining crazy people left in the Federation?
Before he blew
one
of them up.
And then he blew one of them up, so at that point there were only 4 left.
Yep.
That was in, like, 2269.
Right.
Now... Hold on, where's my chart?
He blew her up.
Now, in 2374, over 105 years later, not only is there a care center for children who've been lost in time, but there's a best care center for children who've been lost in time.
I was trying to figure out, how specific is this? Is it for the recently portaled? I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
I could get... O'Brien met the weirdos, right? So I could get if they were like, yeah, there's actually only one place and she's going to have to go live with Bashir's buddies. I could get O'Brien being like, maybe death would be better.
That's right. Those guys are not fun. And they were very mean to me, personally. I was just some kind of workman.
And I probably don't need to reiterate this, but Molly is not going to, quote, be all right on Golana. Molly is going to die alone from an abscess caused by an impacted wisdom tooth at the age of 27.
Yeah, that's right. And no one's even going to be there to see it. Because they can't be bothered.
Also, you can blow up the fucking portal if you want, Miles, but if the Federation decides that you're an unfit parent and they want to intervene, there are other ways they can get this child back.
That's right.
She's not safe there just because you fucking blow up the portal.
You must be counting on the fact that all time travel secrets have been forgotten.
I'm glad she's going to have her doll until a space wolf eats her. I'm glad they gave her one small backpack.
See, I thought it was going to be like a 30-foot eagle or something.
Oh, could be. Just we don't really know what they got there.
Just snatch her.
We know she sleeps up in a tree for some reason, which you wouldn't do if there weren't ground predators.
Yeah, there must be. You're right. One of those ground eagles.
Have you seen the GIF, Matthew, going around of like a big turkey vulture? Where someone wrote that this is what it looks like when any time a Power Rangers villain used to pop up, the way it fucking cavorts.
It's true.
That's what a ground eagle would be like.
I haven't, but as soon as you said it, I remember.
You knew exactly.
I remember what
about the
Power Rangers villains were like. So yes.
Oh, if I find that, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
When she said stars, your home, I had to take a lap. I couldn't handle it. But then when she fucking found Molly and sent Molly back through, I just wrote, oh, what the fuck? Because I forgot that's how this episode ended.
She was like, stars, your home. And Keiko just kind of made a face like, nah, not me, though.
Maybe
this lump, but not me.
Miles, she's corny. Miles, send her through. She's corny.
She's so corny, though. Just said it real loud right in front of her.
I gave best actor to Rene Auberjonois barely in this one, but he does get to realize that he can't give Kira a baby and make a face about it and change the subject. So it's a very small touch, but I gave it to him.
Okay.
Worst actor, pick your Molly.
Well, I didn't because I had worst actor candidate because you get to choose. Keiko O'Brien. I said, man, this is such a bad script. But she did not pull off any of the emotional scenes at all. And then I said, Kid Molly sucked too, obviously. And my only other quick hitter was...
That kid is no Brian Bonsall.
No.
If they'd put that guy in a little Molly outfit and wig and just had him do all the Molly lines, I would have been like, there's something. There's something there.
This kid seems like a little liar for some reason. Did that happen on the planet? Did she learn how to be a little liar?
I know Alexander's had a lot of swings at doing Star Trek, but how come he's better than the kid who plays young Guinan?
Well, young Guinan
and young
Ro
Laren.
Young Guinan was a problem.
And young Keiko, he's better than her too.
Yeah. My only other quick hitter was, it would be hard for me to pity a guest actor more than I do this poor lady who plays Cave Woman Molly.
For fucking sure, man.
That's a tough assignment.
I haven't looked into it. Maybe she's gone on to do lots of good things since then. This cannot be on her reel.
Nah, you can't show anyone this shit.
No.
This is a secret.
They're going to be like, why are you barefoot in stirrups in this? Listen, it's Deep Space Nine, and it was like that.
This one, you just give the Michael Jackson on Rockwell's album treatment. It's like, I know everyone's going to know it's me, but you don't fucking dare say it's me on that record.
Or as the uncredited composer for Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Yes.
Another thing Michael Jackson did not take credit for, but did do.
That too. I'm glad he had standards like that. He's like, no, I'm not. I will do it, yes, but I will not put my name on that.
He's uncredited in his appearance on The Simpsons, too, isn't he? What was that dude worried about? Is Dad going to find him?
Yeah, probably. The answer to what he's worried about is probably always Joe Jackson. Joe. Always, in all things. And we laugh. But that guy did a number on him.
Oh, yeah.
Did a permanent forever number on him.
Oh, for sure.
But I'm still a better parent than O'Brien.
I'm surprised. And Worf. Two real bad parents on this show. I'm surprised we were in and out on this one in under an hour. I thought it was going to be a lot.
Yeah, well. We still got the ones we talk the most about. We always talk about Voyager and TNG the most.
Yep. Well, let's dive into it. Voyager finished second last week, so this week we're talking about Imperfection.
It's a bittersweet day on Voyager. Finally getting rid of these Borg babies. Only Icheb is staying. The twins and the girl, they're gone, man. Some alien?
You know they tried to talk Mazzotti into staying and Icheb into going, but what could you do?
Yep. Some alien lady is taking them. She's got a shitty vessel that they're parked next to. I don't know what her deal is. Anyway, she's taking
I don't know,
kids.
Man. That shit would have looked cool if it was in Defender or Galaga or something.
It was very wedgy. Seven says goodbye. Then later, Icheb thinks it's too soon to turn off their alcoves. But Seven says they eat so much dang energy. But whoops, Seven is crying. That's new. There's scary music. Credits. Seven insists she wasn't sad, bro. She just got a wet eye. So scan my ass and figure out why my eye was so wet. Also, I've had headaches.
Also, she doesn't know that sometimes you can just cry because you're watching the Super Bowl halftime show and Katy Perry comes out on a huge animatronic lion and you're like, I don't know why this is making me cry. Guess I'm getting old.
Yep. She says he can't tell anybody about her malfunctions and asserts doctor-patient confidentiality. I guess she hasn't seen Star Trek. Icheb tells Seven he wants to take the entrance exam for the Academy. He can do it correspondent style, but then also run laps with Tuvok. And she agrees to talk to Janeway about getting her recommendation. But then she starts to break again. So she goes to regenerate, but the computer says her interface is no longer compatible. I fucking hate technology so much. I got so mad when the computer said that to her.
Because her fucking alcove did an over-the-air update and now it don't work no more?
I would have been screaming in that cargo bay. Why?
Samsung
Nothing
my
has
alcove.
Changed. Nothing has changed. Why aren't you working now? Anyway, she's going to have to sleep like a peasant, I guess. Lay on the floor, probably.
She ain't got a bed.
Yeah, the computer told her it's because her cortical implant or cortical node or something is busted. She tells no one. Neelix finds her huddled at a table in the mess, and he offers to make her an omelet, and she straight collapses, and her fucking skin breaks and shit. Little computery bits start popping out.
Yeah, there's way more Bork stuff under there than you would have thought.
Yeah.
You thought it was mainly restricted to her weird glove on her left hand and the eyebrow thing.
No, apparently there's more in her neck and everything. Her implants are being rejected, and it sounds fatal. Like, I guess they couldn't fully take the robot out of her. She's all self-conscious about her state and her imperfections and everything, and she doesn't like anybody looking at her or talking to her. Seven says the Borg would never have tried to replace a faulty cortical node. They just would have replaced it, and Janeway gets her idea face.
Yep.
And decides to take the flyer, which I swear exploded not that long ago.
Well, I'll talk about it later.
To go salvage a new cortical node from some Borg debris field. And yes, TP then says, try not to fucking blow it up this time or something. And I was like, when did you rebuild it?
Next week.
How?
They aired out of order.
Oh, they rebuild it next week. That's great.
They rebuild it next week and aired out of order.
I'm so glad. Anyway, TP insists on coming, and so does Tuvok. It's kind of like when she went on the Borg cube. Everyone wants to play. Janeway tells Icheb about Seven's condition on the way to the flyer, and he wants to come along too, but Janeway shoots that idea down. So he goes to see Seven, and she says Alexander shouldn't see her like this, and shouts at Alexander, and she says, Alexander, get the fuck out of here, Alexander, go with Counselor Troy. You get it.
Yep.
Janeway finds what looks like an intact cortical note among the Borg salvage. But some aliens come to stake their claim.
We don't know. We don't know nothing about who these guys are. They just show up.
Yeah, Janeway is no Chaco, and within moments she's holding a laser scalpel to one of their necks. And then there's some shooting, and Tuvok takes a hit, and TP beams them back to the flyer, and then they blast an enemy ship a bit, and they escape.
Tuvok's okay, though, right? We see a scene later where he's okay, or the doctor says he wasn't hurt that bad, or they reference it in any way. He doesn't just disappear from the episode at that moment, does he?
Yeah, I think that's that may be one of the several shortcomings from this episode. Seven's making a nuisance of herself in sickbay, messing with the doctor's systems and shit, and Neelix brings her flowers and challenges her to a game of Coruscant. And when Seven refuses, the doctor uses some Palpatine-level reverse psychology to convince her to play with Neelix. But this doesn't matter, because Janeway's already back with the node. Big surgery scene. Oh no, she's rejecting the new node. Her implants aren't adapting. It's a big fail. And then we find out it was just a simulation.
This show has done this exact fake out.
Yep. They've done 12 simulations and none of them went well. This node's been inactive for too long. They need one from like a live drone or else it won't work. So Janeway's new plan is to go kill a Borg and take that node.
It really sucked when the doctor said, if we'd only done 10 simulations, we could have still used it.
I think it was going pretty good until just now.
We did 12.
Anyway, her plan to murder a Borg tracks. The doctor talks her down this time from doing a murder to steal a node. Seven whips Neelix at Coruscant, and the doctor and Janeway explain to Seven that the new node isn't going to work. Later, Icheb comes to find Seven, and she turned off the doctor and left her comm badge in sick bay. And I guess she's in engineering now, trying to get some work done to feel useful. And B'Elanna is nice for once and doesn't rat her out, and they chat about the afterlife, and B'Elanna tells her what a legacy is. And the doctor finds her, but he lets her keep working if she wears a monitor. Seven tells Icheb that Janeway signed off on his entrance exam idea. She's a big mope, though. She's terminal, and that's that. Icheb is mad about her fatalistic attitude, and he storms out. But then Wunderkind Icheb does his own research and says he figured out how to save her. He'll just give her his node. He doesn't need it, maybe. He's less connected to his node than her, maybe. He won't die, maybe. He thinks there's an 86.9% chance that Seven's going to survive the procedure, and then he can just get some genetic resequencing.
Yes.
No big deal.
You can do that with a hypospray, probably.
Yeah.
Genetic resequencing.
That only took him like 30 minutes of research, but to be fair, the doctor probably wasn't looking into possibilities that harvested his parts.
No. It probably wasn't on the list of acceptable options for him.
No. Janeway tries to
point
out...
What if we took a big tube out of Icheb's brain and put it in Seven?
Just, look, and just spitballing, all right? There are no bad plans here.
Maybe we just did some genetic resequencing. Doesn't really matter if Icheb lives.
Janeway tries to point out that hope gets you pretty far. Look how much closer to Earth we are because we persevered. But Seven goes, except for all the dead crew. Pow, Seven, bitch!
Seven borrowed a pad from Odo that shows all the times.
Yep, had it prepared. And then one time, three Ferengi took over the whole ship. So I love that she slammed her like that, but I guess her point was Janeway accepted all these other deaths, and she's going to have to accept Seven's as well, even if it's hard. And she also says, sorry about all the fighting, that's on me. That's big of her, because Janeway's the worst.
You know what else was big of her? Not to put Lon Suter's name on the list.
I don't think she got through the whole list.
Even though he died a hero.
It didn't start with Tuvix.
That's true. Tuvix just double underlined.
Anyway, they give her the Ichab option, and she rejects it outright, not willing to risk him. But too bad, Ichab disconnects his own node and says he won't take it back even if there's a fire. And they fight about it, and Ichab says, "Don't tell me about relying on the others when you're gone, because you don't rely on anybody else either." And Janeway seemingly blesses his plan as his body sort of adapts and sort of doesn't to the lack of a node. And Seven eventually relents, and the doctor does the procedure, and he puts Ichab's node in her and applies genetic resequencing to him, and hey man, it all works out. She's already 100% in the next scene. Ichab is worse off, but I'm guessing we'll be fine by next episode.
I mean, she slept for 6 days, so, you know.
Oh, was there a time jump in there? I wasn't even fucking paying
attention.
Yeah, it
was a 6-day time jump that we were not... She said, "How long have I been regenerating?" And he said, 6 days.
Okay. Well, anyway, this time when she cries at Ichab's bedside, they are legit tears. And that's meaningful, and we are out of this episode.
Are you interpreting all the symbols? Searching your subconscious for their meaning?
Chocolate, were you even in this episode?
Yeah, this one isn't that symbolic.
All right.
In fact, I'm going to start with, they made it easy, and I like that.
That's true.
Everyone needs help sometimes, and you have to ask other people when you need help. This is... the part of ethics that doesn't involve bad science, and it doesn't involve Picard telling everyone Worf's a big dumb animal.
For you or for me, it'd be fine. But not for him. It's too far.
But honestly, those elements are what make ethics the best episode to rehash, because it's better off without them.
Yeah, that's true.
It's still not a mind-blowing take that you gotta accept help from people. And no one has previously called this out as Seven's problem.
No.
You know, the way Worf put it on Front Street in season one.
Yeah, good Worf. I'll miss you, good Worf.
Yeah. But it is one of her many issues, so why not?
Okay.
So I'm going to give it as many as 5 for the take.
Yeah, I was close. I said the general form of this is, even if it's difficult, you have to learn to rely on others. It's called being part of a community. Maybe there's a more specific one about there not being any shame in being sick or injured. I said only insane man babies don't understand this, so it's not like it's a huge impact. But there are points for clarity, so I gave it a 4.
Execution.
I don't know. Maybe if I hadn't already seen Ethics. Because it's, in some ways it is a straight cover. But when you said offline it was missing some of the dumb stuff from that episode, you're not wrong. For one thing, Worf gets shittier and shittier as things go on in that episode. Whereas Seven actually tries to, like, make amends and be the bigger person. And...
you can see her sort of making progress throughout all of it, even if she's lost hope.
Yeah. She's, like, trying to, like, be cool about stuff, even if she's pretty fatalistic about everything. The solution is biotechnobabble, but it's still not as dumb as just, oh no, he died. Oh wait, he's just like got better.
Remember how I said earlier?
For Klingon reasons.
For the first time ever that Klingons have redundant everything.
And then I forgot it. I said it early in the episode, but then I forgot that that's a thing that could happen. So it's a big surprise that he's just, for Klingon reasons, he's just fine.
Yeah.
Also, he was like badly paralyzed, but by the next week he's just fucking... normal Worf. Seven is a baby in certain ways, so it's slightly more understandable that she doesn't know how to deal with the emotional ramifications of facing death and disability, but it doesn't make it fun to watch.
No.
I'm glad the Borg babies are gone, and it was so unceremonious, too. They just shipped them off in the teaser, and I was like, fuck yeah. I said, all in all, as Voyager episodes go, it was totally fine, and I gave it a 5.
You should feel free to imagine that the infant went with them, too.
Yes, the infant that definitely still exists.
I think it was their intention to do that, and they just ended up, it wasn't worth getting a baby in there to film it.
They definitely felt it wasn't worth to talk about the baby ever again, for sure.
Yeah, that's right. This is, we're flipped, because this is where I'm a 4. Okay. This episode, again, this is a rework of Ethics in a lot of ways, without the vile Toby Russell and her crimes against science. You gave Ethics a 0 on take, by the way.
Yeah, because it wasn't really, because as bad as it is, it's not really Worf being like, I can't rely on people. It's Worf just shouting at Alexander the whole time.
Yeah. And it sort of works for some of the same reasons ethics sort of works. Seven is a damaged character who hasn't learned some lessons she really should have by now, and it takes a major medical condition to force her to face them. But because it's Voyager, the medical condition can't be something mundane and relatable, like a big barrel fell on her. It has to be Borg nonsense.
That actually is true. It is what ails her is dumber, I guess. That's true.
Yes. Like, the thing that happens to Worf is the opposite of science fiction. Yeah. He has a workplace accident at his warehouse job. That's very relatable. The thing that happens to Seven, a piece of Borg technology we never knew existed, and which turns out to be the key to all of the technology in her body, is blinking. Instead of being like
every time they
light.
Have to talk about her, they have to reinvent her entire fucking backstory.
Yeah, it didn't have to be Borg. A fucking barrel could have fallen on her.
Yeah, man.
There's lots of ways to die.
Shot by an alien or like...
Yeah. Fucking... She could have had her lungs stolen like Neelix.
Yeah, that's right. Neelix had to deal with this shit.
And they take the opportunity to introduce weird space raiders and have a Delta Flyer fight. And that's all wasted time.
Hey, you know,
It's a big dumb action scene in the middle of nothing.
You're 100% correct about that. But just to go back to the previous point. Wouldn't it have been nice if Neelix had sat down with her during that game of Coscot and go, let me tell you about a time I got my lungs stolen.
And I was facing having to live the rest of my life in a weird holographic iron lung.
Let me tell you about how the feelings I had and what people said to me and what I came to realize. And here's some helpful advice for you. But that doesn't happen.
I was watching.
This is the same thing.
I was watching
every
my 2-year-old girlfriend age 10 days for every regular day.
But this is the same thing with every Star Trek episode. These writers do not remember that other things have happened to these characters.
Exactly.
So they never have them give helpful advice based on their insane life experiences.
It's so much better if Neelix had come and talked to her about what happened in... Was that in Phage?
Yeah.
Voyager's highest scoring episode?
Yeah, that would have been a nice callback, huh?
Yeah. But they don't. And this is a character note for sure, but to have Janeway suddenly stand up for a patient's right to refuse a procedure is wild.
She doesn't give a shit about rights.
That's not the writer of this episode's fault, but yeah. I mean...
Yeah, he wrote what he thought was just a good character.
Exactly.
Like, well, of course she would. She's a good person.
And he's not like, Janeway forced that person to undergo the procedure from the weird Cardassian murderer doctor that one time, and also everything about Tuvix.
Everything about everything, man. She's always forcing people to do shit.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a better version of this episode out there somewhere that didn't repeat TNG's faults, but also didn't introduce some of these very Voyager-specific ones. But this wasn't a total disaster. I gave it a 4.
Okay. World building.
Well, they got rid of 3 of the Borg buddies. Is that anything?
I am happy they did it.
Yeah.
I don't know who's adopting them or what the deal is.
Right. They're still making contact with Starfleet regularly, so there's at least a continuity point in this.
Mm-hmm.
Astrometrics, warp mechanics, and quantum theory are all sections on the Starfleet Academy entrance exam that Nog passed, maybe.
Can't even read.
That's not the fault of the writers of this show.
Mm-hmm.
I have world building as a 2 looking at a 3.
I have it as a 2.
All right.
I said, what happens when a mature drone loses their cortical node? What happens when an immature drone loses their cortical node? What possible solutions exist to those problems? Who are these aliens they mix it up with? They look like Kazon rejects. But the peace-loving Federation crew asks no questions and immediately threatens violence, only escaping after a firefight, so we'll never know.
Yeah, if Chakotay had been the one on the Borg mission.
Yeah.
I don't think Janeway sends him on missions anymore, honestly. When was the last time you saw this dude on an away team?
Yeah, I mean, again, I barely saw him in this episode.
That didn't also have Janeway on it.
Yep. Icheb's Academy plan. Again, who is this alien adopting the Borg babies? I hope they were more careful this time after what happened with Icheb's parents.
My little weapons.
3 beautiful baby weapons.
What did you say? My little treasures.
My beautiful children. My new children. A 2 for me. Characterization. 7 got close to those babies, I guess. Though she insists she wasn't crying. She doesn't want anyone to know she's breaking down physically. She's Jar Jar and Anakin level susceptible to elementary baiting. She tries to be the bigger person and buddies up with her two most common foes, B'Elanna and Janeway. In the end, she accepts Icheb's help, but only when the alternative choice is to kill him for no gain at all, so I'm not sure she gets credit for that. Janeway will do whatever it takes to set things right, even and especially murder. In this case, setting things right is saving 7.
Did you even mention when she was gonna go pull a cortical node out of the first living drone she could see?
Yeah, I said that totally tracks. Her plan is to go kill a Borg and take their node.
Oh, worse than that. I'm sure she was going to bring it back alive and strap it down and not even sedate it. And
fucking just pull the thing straight out of its head.
They were ready for the surgery.
That's right, to make sure it was fresh. Yeah, the doctor had to talk her down from that one. At least B'Elanna doesn't bully 7 when she's on her deathbed, basically. B'Elanna basically believes in the afterlife, in Stovacor even. Maybe because she's been on the Barge of the Dead and stuff. The doctor does his best to save 7, but we don't explore his own emotional attachment to 7, which is odd since they hinted at it again just last week.
Yes.
Seems like he could have taken B'Elanna's time, but... oh well. I give it a 4.
Let's see. There's no reason given for why 7 is embarrassed, except that the episode is named Imperfection. Maybe some of it got cut.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's a bad patient, but everyone gets it, and she gets a lot of time to reflect on things, so that's not too bad. Icheb still wants to do more and feels like he's being held back. B'Elanna softened towards 7 a little bit. The big problem is Janeway has made some past decisions that cast this week's episode in a strange light. But really, the way she acts this week is a lot more like you would have expected her to act all along, so it's hard to really hammer this one because she's been a mad space pirate before.
Yeah, but it does make it difficult because it has been a consistent pattern of behavior from her.
It's the same story to a lesser extent with Schmullis. He hasn't always been on the right side of medical ethics either, as far as I'm concerned.
No. No.
He didn't flocks it up. He didn't.
Not named Beverly Crusher, so everything that they, like, McCoy, ugh, Bashir, yeah. Nope, Phlox, I don't think so, and Schmullis, no, bad.
Yeah. I have this one pretty much right down the middle on characterization. I gave it a 5.
Okay. Quick ones.
Like I said, keep Mazzotti, lose Icheb.
Yeah, that's probably better.
When Icheb says he wants to get into the academy, I said, "Yeah, I mean, what even is the academy at this point?" Not got in. when they go scavenging,
yeah,
I know they got to get that core in and out, whatever. But like, you may as well look for a transwarp coil while you're there, huh? Last time they got you like 5,000 light years, 6,000 light years.
Yeah, see what you can do. Send 2 teams.
And then it fucking burned out, but like, well, if you're already going into a Borg cube to do some scavenging, like, well, at least run a scan for one.
Yeah, may as well try to get an extra however many years closer to home.
I wouldn't pick the big rifle. Don't bring the one big rifle for the inside of a Borg cube, man. It's a lot of corners and shit, and
also,
like,
they're
pipes
gonna adapt
sticking
to
out.
That shit right away. Maybe that's why she brought it, so she could club people.
But, Tuvok looked like he was having a hard time working it in a confined space, and maybe that's why he went down. He did put a couple in one of those guys, but...
yeah.
You know, bring one of the littler Type 2s. Or Type 3s, you know what I mean.
I couldn't believe how fast she had a laser scalpel on that guy's throat.
Yep.
She needs to fucking calm down.
By the way, did she watch Starship Mine and say, I want to do this? Because it's the same goddamn laser welder.
Standard issue.
Hey, it's vitally important to take off Seven's clothes to put this tube in her forehead tube slot.
Man, that's what doctors be like, though.
They do be like that.
Like, I got like a finger procedure. Like, oh, it's stripped down. Like, what?
Why do I need to be nude?
I don't think I need
access to your asshole. But why?
I don't think you finger. Need it, though. Think about it. Fucking doctors. They're all pervs.
I mean, it's the future. 90% of their technology goes right through your clothes or whatever. I don't understand why.
Oh, we've seen people hypospray people through clothes. Yeah, don't make any difference.
The computer can simulate what will happen with the salvage node, but they can't make a new one, huh? It's capable of doing an accurate sim. They think it could do an accurate simulation of replacing the node.
Yeah.
But they can't make a new one, man.
Again, this is what I say every time. We know the smartest part of the computer is the holodeck. I would go in
just ask the holodeck what to do.
And I'd say, create a cortical node capable of defeating Commander Data. And watch the most fucking beautiful and perfect cortical node come out of that fucking thing.
Yeah. Hey, we don't mention this on Voyager because actually Voyager does this a lot, but I did notice that when Seven and Milana Torres were having their conversation that it did pass the Bechdel test.
I know. I actually also noticed that. It was
nice. And then
I
thought to myself,
just had a nice
chat. I guess
a lot
of the Seven Janeway scenes do.
Yeah, because they're just fighting about her individuality. Those count.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see one with Milana because a lot of her shit these days is either something terrible's happening to her or I don't get Tom Paris. I don't get him, man. But
that's
did you
not
see
the Tom
in this scene,
I know.
Did you see in this scene that she's got a wedding ring on?
No, I did not.
Again, this episode aired out of order.
Oh, jeez. Ah, jeez. Hey, look, I only have one quick hitter, so I'll save it, but it's fine. I'll save it.
When Icheb proposed taking his node, I wrote, oh, hell yeah, could we lose all the Borg buddies at once?
It would have been so great if he had died and he just left his node there on the counter. He's like, come get it.
And then when they took it out, they're not putting a new one in there, so like, he can hold a whole sleeve of Rolos in there now if he wants.
His Rolo slot?
He's still got the slot, Rolos, man.
In case Robo wants Rolos or something?
Exactly.
He can walk around saying, Robo wants Rolos.
How hard would it be for them to put a little servo in there so the thing could open and a Rolo could pop out?
One Rolo at a time. Like a Pez dispenser. Or Pez, even. Could eat some piss.
Never do find out what happened to Tuvok after he got shot, huh?
Nah, he's like slightly limpy when he gets back onto Delta Flyer, and then after that, it seems he's fine.
I give best actor to Seven in her quiet scene with Torres, and worst actor to the Space Raiders.
They weren't good. My only quick hitter, since we've talked about next week's episode a couple of times already, is LOL. I saw the preview for next week, and I'm so glad I got this one and you got that one.
I'm fucking pissed off, man. I saw their jumpsuits too, and I got mad.
I just went, yes! I got the one that's not bad for Voyager. Where do they?
That is going to solve the problem of what happened to the Delta Flyer, though.
Yeah, good. I'm glad, because when she's like, I'm taking the flyer, I was like, I don't think you can do that.
The Borgs blew it all up entirely.
One, I don't think you're allowed to change when lunch is. And two, I don't think you can't legally ask me how much my hat cost.
Oh. Well, so far at this point, Voyager scored 31 points and Deep Space Nine scored 9.
Oh, single digit, man.
The only question is, can the next generation notch 32 points with the episode Frame of Mind?
Dude, DS9 scored 10 last week and 9 this week.
They're not doing what it takes right now to secure it, huh?
No. We'll see if TNG can capitalize on that.
We open on Riker in civilian clothes doing a powerful act out about a mental patient struggling with some kind of authority figure that is played by an unseen Data And I don't know why we can't see him, because who else could that voice be?
Yeah, Marjan was watching and she said, "That's Data." And I was like, "Yeah.
Yeah, it's Data." Then he flubs a line and asks to start over because they're rehearsing for a play. But Beverly thinks they've had enough for the night. So he heads back to his quarters, running his lines and getting looks from crewmen. Yeah. And then he bumps into a lieutenant with a powerful owl-like forehead appliance. And the music gets sinister as he excuses himself.
He straight grapplers that lieutenant.
After the break, Picard and Riker are in the ready room discussing a missing Federation research team on Telonis 4. And Picard's going to send Riker on an undercover mission to recover them.
No.
Before they get tortured for information. Because he didn't actually read the report from the episode First Contact. He knows that he had to go down there and talk to Miranda Yates or whatever.
Marasta? I had to put this... I had to put this in world building. It blew my mind so hard. I
said, still letting Riker do undercovers.
In what world would they let this guy go undercover again after the shit that happened in First Contact? This is basically world breaking insanity. Of course, he was abducted 2 days after he gets to this planet. Sorry.
Last time you got a blowy from a weird freak, and then we did have to break the Prime Directive pretty badly, and someone tried to kill himself with a phaser because of it.
And everyone felt so bad for him, even though he was trash. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. That's so sad.
But, yeah, no, it's you. Man, there's no one better. We could just send Worf undercover. Come on with this.
I can't believe they don't have anyone trained to go undercover
in
the whole
Federation.
They
should send the Iceman.
They gotta keep going with Riker.
Yeah. Anyway, Picard introduces the idea that some of the factions on this planet have resorted to torture. Worf briefs Riker on the last location of the team, and he gives him his clothing and equipment. He thinks Riker's being a little cavalier about the whole thing, and he seems mad about it.
Yeah, he talks down to him in a big way.
Then he gets way too into the special blade dance that's part of the bartering ceremony on this world, and he cuts Riker's face.
He got so into it because he was really trying to bait Riker into also picking up a blade and going, I too know a sword dance that you might all want to see.
Yes. Riker ain't never read Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Just Art of War? That's the one?
Just Art
with?
Of War.
Okay.
He knows a couple of choice quotes from the Art of War, and the portal wasn't smart enough to know that.
Portal guard.
Beverly heals him up and they banter about the play. I guess it's gonna just go on for one night. They're doing the play one night.
Yeah, it's a one night run, and I'm not certain, I'm not gonna say for sure, that they're doing more than one scene like they did with Cyrano.
It's just a good point. But as he stands to leave, he tells her he still feels pain, which she thinks is odd. Then some guy comes in with badly burned hands and gives Riker a dirty look for some reason. And Riker is so shaken that he has to go have a Cosmo with Deanna Troi in 10 Forward, where he tells her he feels as paranoid as his character in the play Frame of Mind.
And, she says, tell her what the problem is.
Yes. And she says, shit, go with it, man. Who cares? Maybe you're just an actor now.
Yep. I love that he goes to her for help, but he tells her. He's like, hey, you're a trained therapist, right? So here's exactly what my psychological problem is diagnosed by me.
He lays the exact problem out, and she cannot help him and will not help him.
No. Nope.
But then he gets the pain again, and he sees El Búho, but she doesn't think that's weird either. She's just like, what? What, Lieutenant? Riker does the first night of the play, comes out to take his bow, helps himself to a second bow, and sees Duo staring at him again.
Yeah.
And then after one more bow, he finds himself in a cell, and a different owl-faced man is repeating Data's lines from the play.
Yeah. No, this is, we're doing something very, I'm going to say important?
Yeah.
Seems important.
The cell looks exactly like the set of Frame of Mind, and as Riker tries to explain that, he finds he can't remember his name, and maybe the rest of his Enterprise memories are fading too. And the doctor, Cyrus, who you named your son after.
Thank you.
Tells him, was Marjan mad when she found out?
All right, well, here's my quick hitters. I named my son after this doctor, and now everyone knows. I tell everyone it was Cyrus Redblock, but I just want people to think the name's cool. But it's really this guy.
The doctor tells him they contacted Starfleet, and now Riker can sort of remember Admiral Boudreaux saying, probably in a Cajun accent, that they had no idea who he was. It's not one of my stronger accents, so
same
I'm not going to
voice
do
actor as the guy who does Gambit, I'm sure.
Cyrus tells him his head hurts not because Worf cut him, but because he hit it on a doorknob trying to escape. And all the stuff about Worf doing that to him, that's just transference. But Cyrus won't tell him how he ended up in the psych ward yet. Well, he's looking at himself in the mirror when a loudspeaker announces that he's earned a couple of hours in the common area, and then two armed orderlies come to take him there, through a corridor with sounds of screaming and creepy piano music, and worst of all, the exact Owlman from the Enterprise. I fucking think they all look alike.
It's true, once they put all those prosthetics on, they did kind of all look alike.
Yeah. The common area is full of rough-looking people, and one of them comes up to him and tells him she's Commander Bloom from the Yorktown, and she thinks the doctors are harvesting neurochemicals from their brains. Then she pulls out a spoon she claims is a communicator and tries to make contact. The big guard comes by and shoos her away. Riker at this point remembers that his name is Mavek and asks what he did that brought him there, and Mavek, like a real ghoul, is delighted to tell Riker that he stabbed a man up real bad and came in covered in blood.
Yeah, dude. He stabbed him, Ed Rooney voice, 9 times.
Later he does tell Riker, your ass is mine. Riker, at this point, gives a comedy no for some reason.
It's so bad. And
gets ejected with drugs and wakes up on the Enterprise under, frankly, the best blanket we've seen on the whole series.
Oh, yeah. That's like a real comforter or something.
They put a real comforter on his bed this time.
I was like, no wonder he looks a little sweaty. It looks warm under that thing.
Oh, yeah. Too warm, probably.
Yeah.
He was okay when he fell asleep, but in the middle of the night, he woke up sweaty.
Like, don't worry. He was still in his blue pajamas, but he was under a real comforter.
And there wasn't snakes under it or nothing.
Well, they didn't show us. I don't know whether there were snakes under there or not.
Maybe
he's going through a
normal
thing
to him now.
Yeah, I was going to say he's going through like an emotional episode right now, and it's possible there are snakes in there.
Now we're led to believe that it is maybe before the first performance of the play, and he's putting on his stage makeup and talking to Beverly about the big anxiety dream that he had.
Yeah. She's a good doctor, though, right? So, like, she probably tells him to just forget the play. And his health is more important.
She's a good doctor when she's not concentrating on her precious fucking play. Then she had Halls O'Brien in to get a brain scan because he doesn't remember.
Yep.
Her friend. Anyway, during the performance of the only scene they wrote for the play, he sees Mavek, I think, looking through the little fake door. And he starts losing his place as he jumps back and forth between the stage and the cell. And he finishes the play by putting his hands on the owl-faced Lieutenant Suna.
Yeah.
And
it's
Beverly
one of those plays
him
where the audience has to get involved, which I hate so much.
You got to warn me if it's a play with audience interaction so I know not to go.
That's right. I would not go to one like that.
Don't be involved. Beverly takes him off to sick bay. She tells him nothing's wrong with him physically, except he's fucking cranked out on adrenaline.
Yeah.
And as usual, when someone reports vivid, realistic hallucinations, it's get some rest.
Totally normal. A normal thing that happens to everyone when they're a little bit tired.
Riker walks back with Troy, and Data comes up to congratulate him on his rad improv.
Yeah.
But he hears the voice of Dr. Cyrus and has an obvious reaction to it, and Deanna Troi, the empath, also tells him to get some sleep. Very helpful this week.
She was just happy the walk and talk was over, to be honest. It's very hard for her to crane her neck way up like that and look at him
and also to
walk
match
down
his stride.
Yeah, it's hard, man. That's hard work.
She's got boots with, as we've said before, pants strapped under them. You can't just extend your stride when you've got elastic pants strapped under your boots.
Yeah, they're very confining. And again, since she has to look at him the whole time, she can't just look forward and talk. It's just the whole thing's very difficult. So she probably wasn't even paying attention to what she was feeling.
Yeah, that's true. There's a big sequence of hallucinations. I mean, I just wrote, what's even real, man? It's so bad. Anyway,
okay. I was going to say, If I had described this episode, I think we'd already be done because I would have just said a lot of stuff happens. Is any of it real? Probably not. And that would be it.
He ends up back in his cell. We next see him telling Cyrus, oops, at this point I've switched the spelling of Cyrus.
Credit. Yeah, I ended up having to switch it to the doctor. We initially submitted the birth forms and everything, and I had it with an S, and they just said, I think you messed up. I don't think that's how you spell it. And I was like, yeah, no, I know. I know how to spell it. You're right.
Well, we see him telling Cyrus that on the Enterprise, reality keeps breaking up and everything's a little dreamlike, but here in the hospital, everything's real. And then Cyrus says to him, hey, I'm glad you feel that way, but your insurance is running out in 5 days, so we want to try something called reflection therapy to make sure you're fit to stand trial.
Otherwise, we got to rebuild your whole brain from scratch.
Yep.
Those are your two options.
Otherwise, it's the death of personality for you, my friend.
It's just two options. One of them is you look at the holograms for a minute, and the other one is the most major surgery you could have.
Yeah, basically they want to show him a hologram of his own memory. The other option is a fancy future lobotomy.
Yep.
Riker sits down in front of the very ornate scanner. Somebody owns a lathe. Everything has axial symmetry. And tries to remember his emotions. And Troy appears in front of him, representing an aspect of his personality. She tells him he felt trapped. And then Worf appears and talks about being attacked and injured and fighting back. And then Picard pops in to synthesize the actions and emotions logically.
They need a third hologram for this.
And what's weird is that Picard is the one Riker thinks of as the perfect synthesis of logic and emotion, of actions and emotions.
I know. Yeah, that big baby.
Picard, a dangerously mentally ill man.
Yeah, but on Enterprise, who are his options? Fuck.
Wesley
fucking shows up there. He's like,
Ben from Lower Decks.
That's the sanest person I know. Uh-oh. That's not good.
When fucking Wesley pops in?
Yeah.
It's fucking Armus from Skin of Evil. And Riker's like, I didn't know him long, but, you know, I was in him, so I guess.
It's the guy that he gives a lot of advice to so Wesley can manage him better. That science guy pops up. He's like, I don't even really know that guy. I guess I have some opinions about him.
Performance review though. Every year, but
yeah, I guess it turns out I got a lot of feelings about him.
Picard says he was followed into an alley and grabbed from behind by Lieutenant Suna, who Cyrus recognizes as Mr. Suna, the hospital administrator.
Oh, so his name's but the then, same. Great.
But then Troy breaks the fourth wall to tell him none of this is real and he's still on the Enterprise. Mm. And he yells at her and says they're the ones who aren't real, and he sends them away.
Yeah.
And Cyrus is so excited about this progress that he has to go and jerk off, so Riker goes back to the common room to eat some fried rice. But it ain't good there either. Beverly comes in a doctor's uniform and starts asking him if he knows who she is and where he is, and he refuses to acknowledge her because he thinks she's not real. But she promises to spring him. Later, in the nighttime, Data and Worf bust in their spec ops sweaters and try to get him out. But he screams for help and summons Mavec and the little guard.
Yeah.
The
little one who always has a weapon drawn but never has any lines.
That's right. Data, well, he had some lines, but Mavec just says them so fast.
That's right. Yeah, Mavec's a real Jamie Taco. It's true.
Data and Worf dispense with these clowns, and they drag Riker to a pattern enhancer, and then he's up on the Enterprise. And in sickbay, Beverly tells everyone someone's been trying to access his long-term memory. But suddenly he's bleeding again. And even though Beverly tells him it's minor and not to worry about it, he's already been through Future Imperfect.
Yeah, it's happening
and when again. When the wound opens all over again, he turns a fake phaser on his chest, and when he shoots himself, they all get blasted away, and he's back in the cell.
Yeah.
But A, he still has a phaser.
Yep.
And
it's B, confusing to him.
The wound on his head opens again. So
yeah,
this
not
time
only
he
does
uses...
he still have a phaser, but the other people in the room recognize that he still has a phaser. They tell
That's
him
right.
It's not a phaser, but like then when he insists, they're like, it's very complicated.
They do say it's complicated.
He's got some real... He's got some vision people, some hallucination people that are bad at lying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're all defeated by, but what, then why did I have the bowl, Bart?
Yep.
It's very bad.
It's very complicated.
Then he sets it on level 16 and blasts his way back to the stage. And then he's in the cell again, but now only Suna is there. And Riker pushes him and then throws himself into a door and shatters like glass.
Oh, but how were the graphics, though?
Well... Did you ever, do you
like
know,
like a skit from Reading Rainbow or something? Like that's the level of graphics.
Do you know how like when you die in Doom, all the blood comes down and then it shows you the level select screen or whatever? It's kind of that good.
Okay, good.
That's it's kind good. Of original Doom good. Well, now he wakes up strapped to a gurney. It's a real schisms again.
Yeah,
he's in the clothes Worf gave him, and there's a. Some kind of probe going right into the side of his head where the wound keeps opening up. And he uses a cool dragon punch across his body, laying down.
So he's got just maximum force and leverage.
To absolutely house a guy. And then he beams up. Then he just gets on his communicator and beams up.
Yeah.
And so they, I mean, it seems like they must have been able to find that commute. There was no shields or nothing. Anyway.
Yeah.
Picard explains that he was abducted 2 days after beaming to the surface, and they think the bad guys were trying to get sensitive information from his memory. But luckily, Troy says, his mind focused on recent memories as a defense mechanism.
Yeah, his mind definitely knew what was happening. That's Riker for you. He's always aware. That's why he got kidnapped 2 days into his fucking mission again.
Yeah. Well... Don't worry, he's going to be okay next week because he knows the perfect thing to finally put this episode behind him. He goes down to whatever hall they rented and starts striking the set of Frame of Mind.
And he has to do it himself alone.
Yeah, he needs to... She's like, well, the crew... I was going to have the stage crew do that tomorrow. Also, you were abducted 2 days into your mission, which was after the one-night play. It seems like we should have taken it down by now.
I'm just now realizing that I actually don't have a plan to take it down. So yeah, actually, go ahead and take it down.
If he'd gone down there and the whole set was gone, and it was like naked lady painting class or something in there, and it was
ruined
like,
forever. Huh,
computer, what's the star date? And then I told him, and he was like, oh no, that makes sense. I don't know why I thought it would still be here.
But that was the only solution to put his mind at rest, so he would have been ruined forever if the set had already been
taken
down.
Dude, after all the shit that happened in his memories, what's he going to do, ask Troy how to get over this? Time to take matters into his own hands.
That's right.
What's this one about?
Your psyche is mighty powerful, man, if you're all beef and none of the cow, like Jim Kirk or Will Riker. Just straight mind over matter in all cases. Alien plants, Orion women, alien mind-altering drugs and technology. It all fails if you think like a man.
But not worse Tetris. He was very susceptible to worse Tetris.
That episode wasn't about him. I give it a one. This is a one.
Okay.
Just isn't that it? I mean, basically, we're told by Troy at the end, and from what we see, he just like he just powered through it.
Yeah, he grappled his way out of it for sure. I mean, listen, he had the practice from Future Imperfect.
Yeah, except that he's sedated by drugs and stuff, but that doesn't matter once he just like. He just gets that guy so good. But as soon as the guy says it's complicated, he knows he's got it. That's it. And he just wakes up.
I don't think they were trying for anything other than creepy here.
Yeah.
What is reality? All we know for sure is that if you're trapped in an alternate reality, there will be some kind of sign. Maybe Worf is a hulking animal who can't remember how he got his scar. Or maybe there's a visible moon. Yes. Or maybe a wound keeps reopening. Although that can also happen if you're in Han Dynasty China and someone says a good enough insult.
Oh, man. If someone says a hella good insult, such a good insult that, like, you're not even going to be able to have a proper burial after that. Like, that happens sometimes. Someone says an insult so good that your wounds open up and you're ruined forever.
And I ain't ever seen Inception because it's a movie. But I think there's something about a top in that one. Anyway.
Yeah. They got totems for sure.
Maybe the message is, keep your eyes peeled, man. This all might be fake. I give it 0 points.
Yeah, that is worth 0. Yeah, they weren't going for nothing. What was this one? How did it do, I mean, in terms of execution?
I've never liked this one. Riker smashes into a million glass shards, man. But I also think this watch was the first time I understood that the reason the cell looks just like the set of Frame of Mind isn't production laziness, but because all of it is made up. Yeah. He's never in that cell. Yeah. And I think I watched this with scorn so many times that I somehow never picked that up.
Yeah.
That really, the whole time, he was lying on a fucking gurney.
Yeah, the cell is literally just his memories of doing that stupid play.
Yeah, it's a whole make-em-up his mind did about a mental hospital because he did a spooky play.
Yep.
Or maybe it's not the first time, but I don't remember that. I don't know. Anyway, I also didn't remember. Oh, yeah, that means Worf never actually fucking cut him.
I couldn't remember when he went down.
I think we never see reality until he's in the thing. I think everything we see in this whole episode is his memories.
Even the part where Picard explains to him the mission?
Yeah, he's remembering that. It probably went like that, but I don't think we're seeing the real event.
Hmm. I wonder if there's any way to know. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's frustrating that we don't know what scenes, if any, are real.
Yeah. Because I know, obviously, at some point, he's on the bed getting fucked over.
It feels unfair.
But yeah, I think you're right.
To start the episode already in his memory torture, but that feels like the cleanest read to me.
But I think you're
right,
because of the way that wound keeps reopening. It would otherwise, it's just a coincidence that Worf did cut him there, and maybe he remembers that part, and that's also where they put the thing in his head.
Yeah. I think that it also explains Worf's weird bad attitude in that scene.
Worf talks down to him so good in that one. I was so proud of him.
This is
but
like,
I guess it was fake.
You know how Data remembers Riker as having a little bit slightly fucked up hair in
Unification Part 2. Yeah.
This is how Riker thinks of Worf.
He's always talking down to me. He doesn't think I'm cool.
That he fucking A, no sense of humor, and B, gets way too into his swooshy knife dance and makes a lot of faces about it snakes around. That's pure Riker's version of
that Worf. Second part he definitely read correctly.
Yeah.
Worf does get too into his knife swooshes, for sure.
Again, that's why this is maybe the first time that I'm realizing, Worf never even fucking cut him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we'll get to it later. I already have characterization as zero because I couldn't tell which scenes were real and which ones weren't, but it is certainly possible that none of them until the last scene are real.
Anyway, there's not a lot to hold on to in this episode. This is just a bad thing that happened to Riker on a random planet, and next week he's going to be okay because he got to cathartically tear down the set of a play.
Yeah, now he'll never have to ever think about the horrors he went through again.
Anyway, it's Dookie. I gave it a 2.
Yeah. I also gave it a 2. I said, wow. If some research team or whatever is in danger, why not just beam them up? Why send
they couldn't
down...
possibly find the Federation research team on this planet full of identical owl-faced aliens.
Then why send down an undercover operative who will then also be in danger, and why would that help you find the team faster than just fucking searching for them from orbit or whatever? Did I miss something? I don't understand what the stakes are with this mission.
What information are they going to torture out of the Federation research team?
Yeah.
Oh,
they've only been studying this planet, I assume.
These guys are anthropologists, right? What are they going to learn?
We learned about our own past.
We learned about early tool making.
Any idea what the hologram scene was supposed to mean or represent? I mean, like, if everything that happens in the hospital is a dream, which we find out when he hulks up and unplugs in the end, why do I have to put up with weird fantasies within that dream? Is it because I'm not a real person with rights?
Exactly.
Is that why they put me through that? Why do I gotta watch him look at his feelings in holograms in a scene that's not real?
Yeah, none of it's real, man. When she pops out and says, none of this is real,
you're on the Enterprise,
she's more right
fake
than she knows.
Well, yeah, but still fake. He's not on the Enterprise. He's laying in a bed on that planet somewhere.
Yep.
It's all fake. Every part of it was fake. And I was like, what are we doing? Frakes is really bad in this one in a funny as hell way, but still bad. He does some crazy shit with his face. And also, every time he looks confused, which is a lot in this episode, he looks just like Dad.
I've been 90% sure he must have directed this one. Either that or Patrick Stewart directed this one for him. But no, it turns out just a regular director.
Oh, that's weird. The computer graphics are superb. Please never update them. They're perfect.
You mean the graphic of the city, of where the researchers were in the city? Or, oh, you mean the graphics of, for instance, everyone shattering into glass.
Everyone shattering. Every time something shatters.
Every time he shoots a phaser and there's a star wipe.
Yeah. So good. I said, this is a TOS episode or something, right? Then I said, so what happened in the end? He hulked up like Jim Kirk and woke his own ass up, then punched a guy and called for beam out? That's the resolution to this cerebral thriller? He just decided it's wake-up time and knocked a dude on his ass?
You could not knock over a vase with the punch that he threw. There is no way to develop any power at all behind that fucking cross-body open-handed.
Yeah, but that guy goes flying. That guy went horizontal. That guy looked like he took a hit from Bob Sapp.
Now, we know Riker is very good at that palm heel strike.
Sure. But yeah, it's all about technique for him.
But come on with this crossbody punch. He should have said, hey, I got an idea. Let's do another one. And he should have reached out with his left hand and just squeezed the guy's balls.
Maybe like an eye poke or something.
Something, man.
To distract the guy while he like undoes his little straps or whatever. But yeah, no, that guy went fucking flying.
That guy's dead.
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure he's dead. Like several of the times when Kirk hits a guy and I went, I think that guy's dead. I think Kirk killed that guy with that judo chop. Yeah, a two. It's a two. It's not good. And like you, I've always not enjoyed it. And I, you know, we've surprised ourselves many times in this project. This did not get a two because of baggage I had with this episode. It's because it's not any good. World building. Again, in what world will they let this guy go undercover? That's absolute fucking bonk. That's bonkers nonsense. This planet where the government collapsed and has total anarchy and there's a Federation research team that's in danger.
Yeah, this is apparently not a lost human colony or a failed early Federation world. This is just an alien planet. They don't put an appliance on Riker to send him down either. No. It's okay that humans are there.
I was like, at no point does anyone point out.
But he's got to know the bartering dance.
Yes, at no point does anyone point out, even in his hallucinations or anything, that he's the only human there.
Uh-huh.
Everyone else looks like these aliens, and he's the only one who doesn't. I didn't know whether he was supposed to look like the aliens, but like, because it's his hallucination, he just looks like Riker. Like, it's totally uncommented upon. Apparently, it is not important that he's a human. Anyway, these aliens are on one and want to steal Federation secrets. Maybe. And that's all I had, and I gave it a zero.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, look. This guy's trying to get memories out of a brain. It's like the fake plot from Future Imperfect.
Yeah.
Yep. Basically, there's another fucked planet in this galaxy.
That's it.
And
I don't know what to say, because I'm like, is that a zero? Maybe it's a one, right? It added something to the universe. This planet out there exists. I can't tell you any facts about this planet. I just watched the episode. I don't remember what it's called. I don't have any idea what they do there other than capture dudes. I have no clue what happens on this planet.
It's called Telonus 4, and I only know that because I can see it on my notes.
I've never thought about this planet again after having seen this episode 50 times. It clearly does not add anything to the universe.
We don't even learn what happened to the fucking researchers, man. The whole thing is a slap in the face.
No, at least in Who Watches the Watchers, we see those guys get back. I don't have any idea what happened to this research team. Maybe you prefer Devil's Due. Maybe those are the Federation researchers you're more worried about. I don't know.
Ah, I forgot about those guys.
Yeah, there's always researchers on these planets. It's like how America has forward bases on all these in all these countries, but in the Federation, because it's the do-gooder Federation, they're all just anthropological research.
It must be extremely easy to get a grant.
Yeah, probably. It seems like a very positive scientific environment for sure.
People on this planet need money.
Yeah,
they're not. These guys don't take self-improvement credits from the Federation. Plus, you got to do a special dance with your knife every time you want to bargain,
so
if that's real.
Can you imagine if you forgot to buy a pack of gum and you had to go back in? You're Christ. Like, I got to do the whole fucking dance.
I know you've
again.
Already seen the dance, but I do want this. I need this double mint.
The second one's real bad. You're just like trying to get a, look, here we go. Look at my
I'm
knife.
I'm trying to buy a pack of gum, man. How good does it need to be?
Can we just, can we move forward?
Characterization.
Yeah.
Riker was offered command of the Drake.
Sure.
In or prior to season one, right?
Top Speed Warp 3, sure.
When he was 29.
Yep.
So even here in season 6, he's still basically on track for Kirk's admittedly now broken record.
Yeah.
But his big thing has become acting in amateur plays.
Oh, well, luckily we learned a long time ago he was all out of ambition.
He should have never accepted a slot on a ship with Deanna Troi. And I can't wait for his transporter double to make some salient points.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course that dude's not going to recognize him.
But unfortunately, you also have to hear him say, you always had the better hand.
That is going to be rough.
So, it's, you know, it's not all good news.
Riker's 35.
Yeah. But he does seem like he's 50. For sure.
The dude settled in. He had left a butt. He has a butt groove in that first officer's chair.
It happens fast. It happens between season one and two, for sure. He just comes back in season two and he's just like, nah, I'm done. I'm just going to live here forever. Yep, that is season two, for sure.
They're like, hey,
I use it all the time. I use that scene description all the time. I used it when I was giving Marjan feedback on her grant the other day. I was like, see this scene here where you point out all this stuff? And you really like hold everyone's hand. You go all the way through. You're missing one powerful statement that ties it all together. And I said, you risk a Will Riker reading this and stroking his beard and saying, meaning?
They fucking pulled him in summer of 1988 and they said, hey, bud. Hey, Jonathan. Hey, man. I know this was supposed to be your show and you're the new Kirk, but it turns out everybody fucking loves Elias Sejanus over
there. They love Pat Stu so much.
Everybody fucking loves Vladimir Lenin.
Yeah.
So it is going to be his show going forward, but
just
good news,
you know.
We've decided to make you the funny character.
Yeah, you're going to be like the cool, fun guy. How do you like that?
Yeah.
How's
you're going to get tons of pussy.
Yeah, all they
I mean,
we'll keep
we're not
that.
Gonna, we're not going to show any of it because this is syndication.
Because it's not about you.
But,
it's also but, not yeah, about man. You. You'll have a lot of fucking sex off screen, though, for sure.
You're going to be, you're still going to be messing it up throughout the quadrant because everybody likes how aloof Patrick Stewart is. But, you know, just settle in, man. These royalty checks, they're never going to stop coming. So
I gotta tell you, man,
have a good time with it.
The conference circuit is very nice. Going to do all these conventions for the rest of your life. You never have to get another acting job, which is good news for you.
Well, anyway, no one else is in this episode in any meaningful way. He has hallucination memories of Troi, Data, Worf, and Picard, but it's impossible to know if any of it is real.
And he's so affected throughout all of it. In his hallucinations, he doesn't even know who he is or what's happening. So.
Yeah, so this is what we're left with in this episode. Riker's into plays now. So I gave it a 2 for characterization.
That's more than I gave it. I gave it a 0 for not being able to tell what was real and what wasn't and not liking any of it. But I will point out lots of things that, if they had been real, were interesting. Crusher always looks so realistically angry at Riker when he's acting. Yes. Remember when she gave so many shitty looks at him in the one with Data's poetry?
Yes. Well, he was very uncool in that one.
She was giving him the same looks in this one when he messes up his lines. And he's like, let's go again. And she's like, no. Also, I don't want to look at you ever again. Why did Crusher write this weird play about people getting tortured by doctors?
You know why? Because she doesn't believe in psychiatry because she's a fucking Scientologist now.
Just maybe seems like the doctor making this play is kind of, that's a red flag to me.
Yeah, I guess that's true too. You certainly wouldn't want to. You know the follow-up appointments that she has to have because Troy's not licensed?
Yep.
You wouldn't be excited about going to your next one.
No. I also said a good doctor would say, hey man, don't worry about the play, you're going through something. This is a dumb one-act play about doctor torture fantasies I wrote last week. It's fine, your health comes first. but she's not a good doctor, and nobody thinks she is, and that's the key here, because she ain't real in this part, but his subconscious is trying to recreate her.
Man, if she had said, if you want, I'll step in and do the role, and it was all of a sudden very clear that she wanted to do it anyway.
That's right, the
it's
whole time.
It's a fucking 10. It's a 10 for characterization if you're like, I get it now.
That's right.
She feels like she has to offer it to Picard and Riker, because it's their fucking ship, but...
Yeah. Riker has one skill.
Really, her dream is to direct herself.
Yeah. Riker has one skill. It's like an X-Man power or something. He can't control it, but he will groppler the hell out of anybody he bumps into in the hallway.
Yeah, don't fucking step out of a turbo lift right into this guy.
Nope. He doesn't even remember his own name in this episode, but he does remember Commander. Whatever that means about him. I love the way Worf straight talks down to Riker, and I liked it very much. He just says, man, quit clowning around. Fuck. But it wasn't even really Worf, probably, now. I get.
Again, I'm 90% sure that scene is how Riker views Worf.
Yeah, I said, but was that even really Worf? I can't keep any of this straight. I said, not sure anyone was really themselves in this one. Even Riker is so badly affected the entire time, I don't know what to make of him. So I gave it a 0.
Do you have some quick ones for me?
I got a lot of them because I didn't do the description.
And in fact, there's a lot that needs to be talked about.
In fact, my first one was, so glad I don't have to go blow by blow on this fucking stinker. Now Riker knows what it's like to not be believed about his pain like most women.
Yeah.
And he's like, it still hurts though. And she's like, oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure it really hurts.
Yeah. He's probably got a tumor.
That's right.
This is not a random social comment here. This happened to my wife. She had a huge fucking tumor, and every time she went to talk to someone about it,
yeah,
they were like, it's rib pain. Until the second time she had to go to the emergency room, and someone was like, I guess we could do an ultrasound. And then it's like, oh yeah, grapefruit-sized tumor.
One of the grants Marjan's working on is about that. We can talk about it offline.
About the thing Katie had, or about ultrasound technology?
About women not being believed about their
pain. Oh, okay, yeah. If she's got a solution for that, aside from society gets better, I mean, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, unfortunately, her solution is necessary because society is so bad. So anyway. And I said, wait, that's the end of the play? Or is it like when they did one scene of Cyrano? And then everybody clapped like it was over. And that's it?
The end of the play is him saying, I'm not crazy, and slumping down and is against the door, which is, again, I've been to a lot of local theater. It kind of tracks.
The note about how I named my son after this Dr. Cyrus. When Riker made that confused face, he looked just like Dad.
Yeah.
Is the fake ward that they're in just for patients who believe they're Starfleet officers?
Good question.
It seemed like there were lots of people in there.
He didn't groppler that one, huh? Officers.
Yeah, that would have been a weird one. Hard to believe you can be an actor on TV for years and years and have no instinct whatsoever. But that's Frakes.
What do you mean, man? It's Frakes. It's most of the cast of Voyager and many members of Deep Space Nine also.
Here's the difference. I am 100% certain everyone in Voyager checked out in season one.
I mean,
I don't think anyone's even tried.
The infusion of Jerry Ryan in season 4 and the sudden contrast did really cast that in stark relief.
It was like, oh, this is what it looks like when someone's trying. That's interesting.
Oh, she hasn't figured out that she won't need to work again in the future, and she wants to get more jobs.
She rejected that entirely. She kept trying to get jobs afterward. I think the other actors were like, "What this? Look at this fucking try-hard bitch. What, you're too good for the convention circuit like the rest of us?
I charge $80 for a signed 8x10.
You can find
me on Robert Cameo. Beltran.
You can find me on Cameo for $275. It's insane that anyone would pay that much, but sometimes they are married.
It's true.
Another fine walk and talk from Troy as well. Like I said, maybe because she's so short and it's so hard for her to walk along craning her neck around like that the entire time. Why can't they let her character just look forward while she talks?
Like people normally do when they're walking.
Yeah, you don't just have your head turned to the side the entire time. A self-aware show would have Riker on the bridge the scene after his play in David Bowie's outfit from The Labyrinth and calling himself the Goblin King. Yeah, because he's crazy. Man, I envy Geordi. He's got the ultimate pair of shades. He can just sit there and sleep or something. And people think he's paying attention. You notice how his character doesn't move a fucking muscle in all the scenes they show of him? I'm 100% sure the character Geordi was asleep. Even though it's a hallucination that Riker has.
We know he's very comfortable sleeping in his uniform.
That's right. This is probably how he got so comfortable doing it. He's probably asleep in public all the time.
It's like, actually, it's weirder for me to put on night clothes.
Yeah, I sleep so good like this now. I sleep with the visor on great. The only reason I can't do it when I'm lying down is because I'm always rolling on it. It doesn't feel that good.
I've had 3 soft palate surgeries so that I never snore. So that I could continue to sleep in meetings.
I said some of these other ones like about maybe I'm not a real person with rights. I already said I asserted that earlier. So it's your turn.
Yeah. One thing I noticed in the opening scene when I was still giving this one a chance was that under the whole speech from the one scene of Frame of Mind, you could hear the low Enterprise hum. The constant "we're on the Enterprise" signifier, and I was like, I'm gonna be watching out for this in other scenes, because I didn't remember none of this is real. Yeah, it's not gonna matter whether he's on the ship or in the cell. He's not.
No, because he's never in the ship, right?
Yeah. If my security guy was like, anyway, on this planet, bartering involves doing a sexy knife dance and then started doing super serious stepbrother style karate moves, I'd be like, hey, this feels like a data mission.
That's right. I don't think I'm going to be able to pull this off.
Also, we'll get to the end, and I wrote, and see if this was real Worf or if this is already part of the shit, but I do feel like this is the scene that Deep Space Nine writers studied prior to Way of the Warrior. Is this Worf
everybody.
Who cuts Riker's face?
Check him out. He's a real fucking asshole. He's mean to everyone all the time. He cannot be cool.
If I was in one of these situations and I wasn't sure what was real and Mavek and the little guy came up, I'd be like, a big guard and a little guard? How dumb do you guys think I am?
That would have been your part where you said,
this is all fake.
I'm not playing all of this anymore. Is fake. No more games.
Look at these two guys. These guys are right out of central casting. There's no way.
Just throw your phaser on the ground and give up.
If there was such a person as Lieutenant Suna, you know he'd be like, man, this asshole's doing my performance review. Guess it's going to be another year as Lieutenant Junior Grade for me. Because he fucking grabbed me by the collar and screamed, who are you, right in my face.
Looks like it's Starbase 80 for me.
I said my name. He's not going to remember it. He's not going to remember that he did this to me. I'm not getting a bump out of embarrassment here.
Yeah.
We had one of the Borg Queens.
As the lady who thinks
Commander
she's a
Blue
Starfleet?
From the Yorktown. Yeah, okay. That's right. Plus, we had the 20th century historian who eats it in season one, who gets killed by a hologram.
That's where that guy's face was. The doctor who was treating him.
Dr. Cyrus was the 20th century hologram.
The guy who's so stoked until he takes a bullet.
Oh, I can't believe we're going to get to go watch a Dixon Hill movie.
This, believe it or not, this is the peak of my profession.
I am so excited to study this hologram about 20th century Earth like it's anything.
About a shitty fictionalized version of 20th century Earth where everyone in San Francisco is a Chicago gangster.
Best actor was a tough one for me this week. I thought maybe Spiner giving a straight-faced compliment about improvising.
Yeah, maybe a couple weeks in a row now where he got the assignment. That he's not an emotional basket case.
You're talking about this one, and he's barely in the chase.
Yeah, it was the chase in the scene with Nudak.
Where he just plays
it totally emotionless all the way to the end.
Yeah, he fucking crushes that one.
Huh, he understood this week that he's not, he wasn't almost crying or making weird gag faces or anything.
For worst actor, I've got not Mavek, but the little one. So,
that poor guy.
He said after last time, he's never not going to put his weapon away.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't anything. Hey, the scores are in, man. last place this week with Frame of Mind. It's 7 points. 7 points for Frame of Mind. That is the worst TNG by 3 points.
Oh, no. But you know what? Kind of predictable. If you had said to me before we started the project that the worst TNG was Frame of Mind, I would have said that was plausible.
It is also the third worst episode so far.
Oh, man. I mean, that is...
We scored that lower than Live Fast and Prosper.
Oh, no. Well, Live Fast and Prosper had that Tuvok role player that I really enjoyed.
Daniel Day-Lewis is Tuvok, yeah. this is lower than the Omega Glory. After you've said the Omega Glory, you get to Times Orphan, Deep Space Nine this week with 9 points.
Well, there you go. Yeah, they were very bad this week. They both have an underlined dark red. That's not good.
That's the worst episode of Deep Space Nine. I haven't looked at it, but I'm guessing we haven't had two worst episodes since episode 10, right?
Yeah.
Since things settled in the same week.
I think that's probably true. That is surprising. But they really were bad, though.
They were very bad. And I didn't like either of them. This isn't the rubric bit, these guys. This is too bad. Listen, did I do my Deep Space Nine? Yeah, I did. Anyway, I must have skipped over this. I wrote, there's no one left on this show I fuck with. After everyone just agrees to O'Brien's murder plan.
Yeah, it's true. Who's the moral center of Deep Space Nine? I do not know.
Who's fucking left?
Martok? Martok seems pretty cool.
At the end of the episode, Dax and Worf are excited to go to dinner.
I know.
Over at Keiko and Miles' house to talk about how they stuffed their 18-year-old problem daughter in a hole. And luckily, the good daughter came back out.
That was just a happy coincidence.
They didn't know that was going to happen.
No. Yeah, no, I think it's Martok. They've spent a lot of time showing us how cool that guy is. I think he's the only one.
Yeah, so those two episodes together scored 16 points.
That's about half of what Voyager scored this week.
Voyager put up 31, which is, for Voyager, a pretty good score.
Yeah, it's all
the
like,
last time Voyager put up
this.
31.
That's not a very high score, but for Voyager it is, yeah.
Yeah, Voyager last notched 31 points. Boy, I keep scrolling back. I'm going to find it eventually.
Oh no. Oh, no. Yeah, I'm going back.
It was Once Upon a Time in week 98.
Is that some kind of Flotter business or something?
That sounds like Flotter T. Otter.
Yeah, that one did score 32.
Yeah. So that's the last time Voyager scored higher than that. But that's Voyager's eighth win. And now the odds of getting through the rest of the series without notching a ninth win to tie Enterprise... starting to seem slim, given some of the shit that we know is coming up for TNG.
Yeah, but it'd have to get like
DS9
more wins.
Just has to suck one up.
It would have to get like 6 more wins though to match Enterprise's ratio, though, right?
Oh, for sure, and it's not going to do that. But
it ain't going to do that.
No. It's still it's over half of Enterprise's win percentage now. But
it's true. For a while, they were at 2, and it was very bad.
When Enterprise went out, it looked pretty difficult. Voyager was going to get all the way to 9.
Yeah, I think we said something like at some point it'll drop down to just 3 a week, and then you just have to get lucky, and that is what happened this week for sure.
I mean, a 31, in these degenerate times, a 31 wins a lot of weeks, frankly.
The shows do seem like they're all fucking getting worse.
Part of that has to be us, right? Part of it has to be our tolerance for it is getting lower, and we're
very
comfortable giving low scores. And
but I don't know. Was Prophet and Lace ever going to get a lot of points, you know?
I mean, but if you just look at it, the trajectory for every single series when you look at the averages, is off. It's pretty much a strict decrease.
Oh, yeah. No, there was a time when all these guys were over 30 pretty comfortably, and Deep Space Nine is really just hanging on by a thread right now at that 30 point.
Oh, 30.07 right now? Yeah. Yes. They're very close.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Right. No change in the leaderboard. It's still TNG with 59, Deep Space Nine with 53. But Voyager does get an eighth win. And every time DS9 doesn't win, it gets a little tighter for them.
All right. Well, what are we doing next time?
Next time, we will be describing the TNG episode Suspicions.
All right. Well, Dr. Crusher, moral center of the show.
Yeah. Maybe it won't be reprehensible, at least.
Yep.
For Deep Space Nine, we've got The Sound of Her Voice.
I remember this very vaguely, and I think it's not going to be a good one.
Well, why should they finish out the season strong? It's not the last episode. That's the week after, but yeah.
Yep.
And I get to describe the Voyager episode, Drive.
Now, the title always definitely made it seem like it was going to be some terrible nonsense, but after I saw the little teaser and the description, I went, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're going to find some contrived reason for Tom Paris to enter the new Delta Flyer in a shuttle race of some kind.
Yeah, so. with unruly aliens and shit. And I bet it's to get minerals. They always need minerals, so they're probably going to try to win some minerals.
You guys want to psych yourself up for that? Go back to our special Star Wars series from 2000 and listen to the description of the pod race. I think.
Did you just describe that series from the year 2000?
It was from the year 2000, my friend.
No, you said our special Star Wars
episode. Oh, 2020. Star Wars series. It's from 2020. I do that every time when I want to say 2020, I just say 2000.
I was like, oh, shit, man.
I always make the number two round.
That was a long time ago, but damn.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what we'll be watching next week.
Well, I'm not super looking forward to it. Let's just not let this slide to 2026. Can we manage it?
I don't know.
I've been sick lately and traveling lately, and you've been traveling, and we got to stay consistent and get these fucking horrible episodes done so that we can just be finished with this thing.
We've got 8 months left in 2024.
That I know.
Could theoretically be as many as 16 episodes, but it'll probably be 12 or
more. I was going to say, it probably won't. The shit keeps happening. I could be sick by the next time we do this, for sure. I mean, I will have been sick by the next time we do this. It's just, will it hold up the episode?
But either way, it's going to leave us with under 20 to do in 2025, so I think it's doable.
All right. Okay, that's encouraging, at least. All right, everybody. Jolan True, Peltor Joy. As you believe, so shall you do. So shall you do. As you believe, so shall you do.
Let me just poke my head put in there a real camera quick and in. Scream Molly.
Why don't we put a camera on a long stick and put it in there and see what happens?
See if we can see where Molly is.
Yeah, no one says any of that.
They would have done some different stuff if they tried that.
Please subscribe.